Let me take off here. Okay, party's over. Our camera person seems to have disappeared. You ready? Okay, let's call this meeting to order. For the Champaign County Board, it's the Committee of the Whole for Finance, Justice, and Highway. Today is Tuesday, March 13th, 2012. The time is 6:05. Please turn off your cell phones or put them on silent. Roll call, please.
Esri.
Here.
Holderfield.
Here.
James.
Here.
Jay.
Here.
Kibler.
Here.
Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
Maxwell.
Here.
McGinty. Michael.
Here.
Mitchell.
Here.
Mosier. O'Connor.
Here.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Richards.
Here.
Rosales.
Here.
Schrader. Alex.
Here.
Ammons.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Peter.
Binzel.
Here.
Berkson.
Here.
Betts.
Here.
Carter.
Here.
Kohler. And Weibel.
Here, we have a quorum. Seek approval of the minutes for the February 14th meeting, to meet the whole meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Rosales, second by Mr. Kibler. Discussion on the minutes. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, public participation. Again, the rules are we have a total of 1 hour. Seek approval of the agenda and the addenda.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. James, second by Mr. Kurtz. We're going to remove item 8A. The sheriff was not able to get a report ready for tonight. In addition, Mr. Blue asked that we move highway to the front of the agenda and start out with the roundabout presentation by Hanson Engineering, just to get that out of the way. Does anybody have anything against that? That means, Lorraine, you'll be up first. I'm sure you don't mind. Okay, all right. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Okay, now on to public participation. Again, we have 1 hour. Are you each allowed a maximum of 5 minutes each? And you cannot interact with the board. That is, you cannot ask them questions. First up is Mr. John Sullivan. That much you can do.
Good evening. My name is John Sullivan. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Women in Transition in Champaign and Urbana. Being distributed down the tables is an informational fact sheet. From July 2010 to July 2011, the Center served 560 women and children in our community. In the period from February 2011 to February 2012, we had 81 single women and 19 families who we could not house and provide services to in our community. These are individuals living in cars, couch surfing, living in parks. In the last year, the Center for Women in Transition received federal funding in the region of $212,000 state funding in the region of $638,000 for a total of $850,000. The local funding we have received is around $197,000. So for every dollar that the community invests in the Centre for Women in Transition, we get $4 from state and federal funding brought into this community. If you look on the back page of the informational sheet, you'll see a small graph. One of the grants we've received from the federal government is a transitional housing grant. Federal funding from HUD, Housing and Urban Development, does not go up with the cost of living. And you can see an example there from when we first received this grant in 1980 and the cost of living, which has gone up 297%. Utilities, health insurance, and all the other good things that goes in terms of running a transitional shelter. The dilemma we have as the Centre for Women in Transition is, of course, funding for the resources to provide shelter for the people in need in our community is being eroded by inflation. The numbers to be served are not being served. We don't have an emergency shelter. We don't have enough transitional shelter. And there are people in our community on the street. The solution, I suggest, is a community investment, which is both economically sound. The investment itself brings more money into the community and meets the needs of those individuals in our community. Thank you.
Next is Sheila Ferguson.
Hi, I'm Sheila Ferguson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer for Community Elements Behavioral Health Agency in Champaign County. Tonight I'm talking specifically about two programs that we operate, one Time Center and the other the Runaway and Homeless Youth or Roundhouse programs. And as John pointed out, and you may be aware, there are continued proposals by the state to cut funds to shelters and programs that offer transitional housing for those in need in our community. Specifically and currently, the proposed governor's budget offers us a cut of 52% in this coming fiscal year, and that is really from the Department of Human Services Transitional Housing Program. And so, as John pointed out, we see our operating costs increase and the cuts coming pretty fast and furious these last few years. Last year, the Time Center provided more than 69,000 meals and over 18,000 nights of care to people in Champaign County. Roundhouse, which is the homeless and runaway youth program, served over 300 unduplicated youth and young adults who had issues related to barriers on housing. Meals, transitional housing, linkage referral are needed supports that are relied upon by a lot of our emergency and first responders in the community. So Community Elements and the Center for Women in Transition are working together to find alternative funding for those in need. One way we believe to increase the available resources for community-based services is to respectfully request county board members to place a referendum on the November ballot. Specifically, we'd like to have the voters decide if they'd like to support a restoration of the Mental Health Board tax levy back to the original levy of 15 cents per 100 in assessed valuations, for example. And as I mentioned, the background, we have been negatively impacted, and our community has been negatively impacted, especially as it relates to community-based mental health, developmental disabilities, and substance abuse treatment services and systems. The cuts have devastated our safety net of supportive and transitional housing programs for the homeless in our community. If a referendum is placed on the ballot, we hope that the voters vote positively for it. The resources from the tax levy could be used to strengthen that system of care that I'm talking about in the community. And I know from the past year, looking at the needs assessments done by the United Way and others in the community and the homeless study that was done and the count that was done, the items that have risen to the top on the minds of those in service positions as well as some of our advocates, for example, NAMI, which is the National Alliance for Mentally Ill, are looking at trying to put together a plan to have family or individual shelters, more shelter services, trying to support treatment services in the existing shelter programs, help fund some of the items that John talked about in terms of the operation costs continuing to go up while we continue to see cuts at the state and federal levels. We'd like to be able to fund outreach and intensive case management service and expand the number of crisis transitional and permanent housing opportunities that we have available. All these services can help our first responders as they see more and more issues of homelessness in the community. Thank you for your time tonight. I'll be passing out just the background information that I talked about.
Mike Weissman.
Hi, everybody. I wanted to talk a little bit about the jail issue. I think everybody can see that it makes logical sense to figure out what the jail census is going to be before deciding how much construction is needed. And everybody pretty much agrees that every measure should be taken that's, you know, reasonable and consistent with law enforcement to reduce the jail population. And what I wanted to point out is that there are some rather simple legal available measures that could be taken very, very rapidly. I'm told that roughly 60 of the prisoners are currently pretrial, which means that there's no state law requiring that they not be released with GPS ankle bracelets, a standard technique used in many places. So I'm suggesting that the board should simply buy the ankle bracelets, buy the monitoring system. We're talking about small amounts of money, and encourage the local judiciary to make use of them. I'm told that there's about 50 post-trial prisoners who people would like to release with ankle bracelets but can't because of some court decision. Well, that's not completely in your control, but you can encourage our state legislators who are already working on this to expedite the law that will overturn that decision and get those people out. Now, if you add 30 and 50, you've got more than the census of the downtown jail. And so that strongly will change the parameters for what sort of construction might be needed. If you could simply empty it and demolish it, that's a lot different constraints than if you need to figure out what to do with people who are currently in it. So another step that ought to be taken is to, again, slightly out of your control, but you can encourage the local prosecutors to try to bring the charging levels more in line with those of other similar counties, reducing the number of prisoners who the judges will feel shouldn't be offered bail, and in some cases reducing the sentences to more in line with what neighboring counties have. When these measures are taken, it'll take, you know, months to maybe a year to see how they're going, then are we possible to have a much better idea of exactly what sort of construction is really needed. Thanks.
Mr. Aaron Ammons. Let's move on to Julian Penegras. Chris Evans.
Chris Evans, resident of Champaign, District 8. Thanks again for public participation. Speaking on behalf of the voters again, who in 1998 voted for a quarter-cent sales tax that generates about $4 million a year on annual sales transactions of about $1.6 billion a year in this county, it's these 23,000 voters who decided to tax themselves in this way with the understanding, so they were told in Ordinance 572, that $4 million a year of taxes would be used to pay off the $9 million satellite jail, the $4 million youth detention facility, and the $23 million courthouse expansion for a lovely 11 courtrooms. And voted for all this they did with the understanding that, upon paying for these three construction projects, to quote Ordinance 572 again, quote, this tax shall be repealed unless the tax's continuation is approved by a majority of the voters of Champaign County in a subsequent election. It's these voters who, by the way, did not authorize the sales tax to be used for utility bills beginning in 2003, did not vote for a $6.8 million renovation to the old side of the courthouse in 2007, and who will not get to vote for the $20 million maximum security jail expansion, and will have no say whatsoever on whether to send this county's budget off the cliff into debt until the year 2029. On behalf of these voters who have been lied to and had millions upon millions of dollars stolen from them, I'd like to talk about the next most important criminal justice need in Champaign County. Now, on last week's episode, we learned that the first $1.8 million of stolen money needs to go to fix the downtown jail that you're required by law to maintain. Now, this week, I want to talk about the next most important criminal justice need for every inmate in Champaign County, and as any good defense attorney will tell you, what every inmate needs first and foremost in this county is proper, adequate, and effective legal representation. Now, you have no control over who gets arrested, no control of what the cops are going to do, no control over what the citizens are going to do, but you have are completely responsible for how equipped and staffed the public defender's office is. And it is you, the county board, who determines the caseload for each individual attorney, and therefore it is you, the county board, who determines the quality of legal defense for indigent defendants in this county. Now, in the RFP you were given, you'll see on top of page 9 a portrait of the state's attorney's office compared to the public defender's office. You'll notice that there are few statistics in regards to the public defender's office. The state's attorney's office is staffed with 17 full-time attorneys. The public defender's office has 14 full-time attorneys with 3 support staff. But if you look at the county budget for 2012, you'll see a more accurate picture of the resources available for each office to handle the county's caseload. The state's attorney's budget is double of that of the public defender's, about $2 million a year for the state, compared to $1 million a year for the public defender. The state's attorney has 43 employees, including one full-time investigator, on top of the 400 area patrolmen and detectives from the local police agencies to build their cases, whereas the public defender has only 17 mentioned in the RFP and no investigator whatsoever. Well, maybe that's because the state's attorney's office handles twice as many cases as the public defender's office. According to the 2012 county budget in review and the RFP, the public defender's office handles about the same number of felonies, the same number of misdemeanors, the same number of DUI violations, the same number of juvenile cases. Operating with half the resources of the state, the public defender is managing about the same number of cases that could involve in somebody going to jail. Some of you thought income of the defendant didn't matter. But in Champaign County, we prosecute primarily poor people. The end result is that the attorneys in the public defender's office handle 400 to 450 cases a year. This caseload number is very important because the American Bar Association, and when were you going to tell them? The American Bar Association recommends attorneys handle only 150 cases a year in order to remain effective on each individual case. The primary complaint of inmates and bonded defendants alike in Champaign County is that the attorneys who are assigned to represent them rarely, if ever, actually work their case and seem to be working against the defendant in order to help the state prosecute them. That doesn't mean the public defenders are bad people or incapable people. They simply have no time to investigate a case, no time to subpoena the necessary witnesses, and no time to prepare for trial. They have too many cases to do so, and 98% of the time, the public defenders only have the time to relay to the defendant how much punishment the state is offering the defendant if the defendant will plead guilty and not make anyone to work to prove their guilt. The District 5 representatives are trying to tell you the residents don't have as big a complaint about the physical conditions of the downtown jail as they do with the deplorable legal conditions they face when accused of a crime in Champaign County. Now, how important is an adequate defense? It's been suggested that if there's an arrest, somebody did something. If you read your own RFP, you'll see that half of the people arrested in Champaign County have their cases dismissed, and half the people taken to the county jail are released with no criminal charges pending against them. Read the RFP and you'll see it. The state's attorney says they reviewed 8,400 police reports, but it seems only 4,241 prosecutions occurred in 2011. Apparently, 4,159 police reports were discarded and never pursued in court.
Your time's up.
Okay, to conclude, I would ask that the next $1 million of the stolen money be sent to the public defender's office every year thereafter. That would be justice, and that's the purpose of the Justice Committee. Thank you.
Mr. Darrell Cruz.
Hello, Darrell Cruz, 2007, South George Huff in Urbana. First of all, I would like to thank the county board for taking the time the past several months to listen to public input on this jail issue. And the fact that I think the public input is extremely important, and you're to be commended for taking the time to do that. As a result, also, when you look at the jail space improvement planning team and the RFP, I think you can see the benefits of revisions that were made to the RFP, the fact that the county board recognizes the need for inclusion of minority representation, and that this process be done right and we get it right now and not after we get into the process. I would like to speak very briefly to the issue that the county board is going to be discussing tonight under the Social Justice Committee, and that is the formation of the Citizens Advisory Task Force. I have a fear, along with some other people, not the fact that you're forming this committee and are authorizing it and charging it to do certain types of things on your behalf, to collect information, analyze it, synthesize it, and give you a report. I think that's extremely important, and I applaud you for doing that. But I'm fearful that once this committee is formed, that it's going to possibly fall into a black hole and disappear out of sight of the board. And that one of the problems I can perceive occurring is that you have two committees that are being charged to do specific things on your behalf, the Citizens Advisory Task Force and the Jail Space Improvement Team. I would ask you to consider tonight, as part of a motion, to ask the chairpersons of each of these two committees to get together to formulate a time frame and schedule of activities that kind of coordinate what is going on between the two of them so that there's the proper linkage and there isn't an isolation of what is happening between the two committees. And I would also suggest that I think the information that both committees may be drawing or working to receive on your behalf, that there's a mutual benefit in how each committee can succeed in reporting to you at the end if they are asked to share that information on an ongoing basis with each other to help inform the facilities committee with the type of information maybe the Citizens Advisory Task Force is collecting, and vice versa. And so my suggestion to you tonight is not that you're forming these two committees, but make sure that the communication, the linkages, the coordination, the information sharing results in the ultimate reports and outcomes that you would like to have as a county board so that you can get it right in the end, as I think some people have said. So I would encourage you to consider that and act upon that. Thank you.
Aaron Ammons.
Good evening, everybody. The first thing that I would like to address, and it's basically a request from, I don't know if it would be the chair of the county board, Pius Weibel, or the chair of the facilities committee, Tom Betts, but I would ask on behalf of myself and numerous other folks in the community who watched the county board last Tuesday and heard the, in my opinion, very racist but certainly insensitive comment from the state's attorney in relationship to a motion that Carol Ammons made about having African-American representation on the jail planning committee. The comment from the state's attorney that a, quote, token person of color does not need to be on this committee I believe is unacceptable from someone who holds the office that she holds, and I think that it is right, just, and needed for the county chair or for Mr. Betts to remove her from this committee immediately. That is the request upon from myself and various other folks in the community as we continue to move forward with our vote of no confidence in Ms. Reese because of these racist statements and some of her practices that have led to overcharging in the county jail. We were also encouraging folks to not vote for Ms. Reese, to leave her oval blank when they go to the polls. And so this is indicative and a reflection of how strong we feel about these comments that she has made, and we hope that you will do the right thing and remove her from this committee. One of the other things that I think is being missed, and this is also in relationship to this county jail issue, is that there's a lot of discussion about what may be coming in 2015, but it seems as though the immediate conditions in the jail are being ignored. And I don't understand why there's not more conversation about the immediate needs of the jail and the downtown jail right now because of the people who are there, the women who are there, and who are, as Ms. Berkson often says, that they are, this is an inhumane condition, and they are not being treated fairly and treated justly. So I'd like to see some immediate attention to the conditions there. And I think the facilities director said at one point that it was like $1.5 or maybe $2 million worth of work that needed to be done to address the concerns immediately there. So I'd like to see that take place. And one thing I wanted to connect some of this information that Mr. Evans shared, there was a report. It's called Racial Divide, Minority Students Face More Discipline. And this was something that was put out recently, and it came from the U.S. Department of Education in the Office of Civil Rights. And one of the statements is that the African-American students are 3.5 times more likely to be suspended or expelled than their white peers. The key point here that I think connects to the county board in this issue of the jail, it says that 70% of students arrested or referred to law enforcement for disciplinary infractions are black or Latino. Other researchers have found that students who are repeatedly punished by being barred from campus are far more likely to drop out. Well, we also know that if these students drop out of school, the next stage for them is county jail and then the penitentiary. So I would like to just sort of float to the county board. I do not have a proposal in writing, but maybe Mr. Parsons could help me out with this at some point. I didn't mean to put you on blast like that, bro. How you doing? But a partnership that is, maybe there is one already, but a partnership between the county board and Unit 4 schools, that maybe some of this quarter cent money that's going to be used to house these youth who are being expelled from school could be used for a preventative program in the school, so there would be a connection between the county board and the Unit 4 school district to fund some more programs to prevent them from actually dropping out of school. I think that would be something that would be very helpful and right, just, and needed. So thank you for your time. I appreciate you listening.
Sarah Lazar.
Hello, I'm Sarah Lazar. I live at 412 West Illinois Street in Urbana. And I'm here today from the Solidarity Committee of the GEO, IFT AFT Local 6300. The Champaign County Board and the Jail Project Planning Team need to look into alternatives to expanding the county jail. Many other communities have implemented programs that provide alternatives to incarceration, simultaneously reducing recidivism rates and saving counties millions of dollars in costs related to incarceration. I'm going to share some examples of these programs with you today. Many counties and municipalities around the nation have successfully implemented pretrial diversion programs. Rather than sending offenders directly to jail, these programs allow law enforcement to arrest and immediately release those accused of certain nonviolent offenses. People in these programs are either diverted to pretrial rehabilitation programs, or they are issued summons instead of being incarcerated prior to trial. Counties and cities that have implemented these programs have seen tremendous cost savings due to the reduced numbers of people incarcerated before trial. In some cases, pre-trial diversion programs and the associated fees actually generate revenue for the counties or cities in which they are located. Take, for example, the pre-trial diversion program of Monroe County, Indiana. People arrested for the first time for certain nonviolent offenses like public intoxication, marijuana possession, and misdemeanor motor vehicle violations complete substance abuse education and treatment programs, therapy, or community service programs instead of being incarcerated. After successfully completing the diversion program, the charge is removed from the defendant's record. The cost for this program is borne by the alleged offender. In Monroe County, the cost is approximately $400 per offense. Those who cannot pay the fee are still eligible for the program. Their fees are automatically waived. Monroe County is similar demographically to Champaign County. Indiana University in Bloomington is located there. The prosecutor's office of Monroe County says that the pretrial diversion program generates so much revenue that it pays for itself and subsidizes the other aspects of the county's budget. Municipal laws were changed in New Orleans to encourage police to write a summons for court dates and nonviolent misdemeanors instead of making arrests. Drug arrests processed more quickly, leading to less time in jail. Law enforcement developed a risk-based assessment instead of relying solely on bonds. Low-risk individuals are released on their own recognizance. These measures have reduced the number of beds in their county jail from 3,500 to 1,400. Since 2007, the pretrial wait in jail for drug offenses has dropped from 64 days to 10 and a half days. These are low-cost legal and administrative measures that reduce the amount of people who are stuck in the jail system. Proper development and support for county drug courts or substance abuse treatment facilities are other examples of successful alternatives to incarceration that drastically reduce recidivism, save the county money, and help offenders become contributing members of society. Proper development and support for county drug courts or The in-jail substance abuse treatment programs in Polk County, Florida, called JASA, exemplify the kind of success a county can have using alternative substance abuse treatment as part of their criminal justice system. The JASA program helps its participants understand addiction, improve their self-concept, and develop positive skills in communication and anger management. Currently, 81% of JASA graduates have not been re-jailed. Not only has the JASA program benefited those who have participated, it also benefits the county taxpayers by being cost-effective, freeing space in the county jails, and eliminating the need for expansion of jail facilities. The Polk County Sheriff's Department reported that the economic benefit of inmates successfully completing drug treatments is $68,000 per inmate in reduced crime, arrest, prosecution, incarceration, and health care costs. Independent auditors have estimated that taxpayers save $1 million for every 50 graduates of the JASA program. They have also asserted that the elimination of such a program would cost 1,600% more to taxpayers than to maintain the program. These figures reflect the great benefit that these kinds of programs offer a community and reflect a direction the Champaign County community should consider. In addition to substance abuse treatment programs, many counties have found success with drug courts. While Champaign County has a drug court, it has faltered through lack of support. There are a variety of examples of successful drug courts across the nation. One such example is the Northern Hills Drug Court, which serves offenders in four counties in South Dakota. Through Northern Hills, a judge must agree to sentence someone to drug court, and the county state's attorney's office must approve all applicants for the program. Accepted offenders participate in mandatory weekly drug court meetings. This program has obvious financial benefits for the participating counties. In the 2010 financial calendar year, these counties saved $305,000 in avoided correctional costs, $71,000 in avoided foster care costs, and over $188,000 in earned income and wages by participants. In addition, participants completed 830 hours of community service, paid nearly $11,000 towards treatment costs, and over $4,000 in child support payments.
Sir, your time's up.
Okay, I'm going to ask someone else to come up and read the rest of this statement.
Bill Ziegler, please.
Good evening. My name is Bill Ziegler, and I live at 4704 North Willow Road, Urbana. My comments will be directed to the proposed roundabout at the intersection of Lincoln Avenue and Olympian Road. I'm a farmer, and I farm land on both the east and west sides of Lincoln Avenue in the area of Olympian Drive. I wish to comment on the proposed roundabout. This intersection is located in open rural farmland. We do the farming for the Squire Farm, and we need to be able to access their land. The Olympian Drive cuts the farm in two. The only way to get the farm equipment from the field on the north side of Olympian Drive to the south side of the Olympian Drive is to come out onto Lincoln Avenue, pass through the intersection, and then into the south portion of the farm. If there is a roundabout there on Lincoln Avenue, it will make it impossible to accomplish this. Our bean header is 25 foot wide. Our planter is 30 foot wide. A neighbor of mine who travels that road and moves his machinery on Lincoln Avenue, his corn head is 30 foot wide. His bean head is 40 foot wide. The planned lanes for the roundabout are 18 foot and 16 foot on this roundabout. And there are some directional poles that will take some of the lane access. We absolutely cannot fit our equipment through these lanes. All that is necessary at this T intersection is a single stop sign on Olympian Road. The road to the north is not usable for commercial traffic because it's just a oil and chip township road. And it also is posted by the road commissioner, no through truck traffic. East of the Olympian Road, dead ends. The road on the north, as I said, is not usable for commercial traffic. A roundabout at this intersection is totally unnecessary and a waste of taxpayer dollars. Thank you.
Mr. William Cope.
William Cope, 4018 North Lincoln Avenue, and someone's going to hand out. I've done a little information sheet so I don't waste too much of your time tonight dealing with this issue of the roundabout, which I want to speak about. So I come from a country where there are a lot of roundabouts, so I'm not speaking against roundabouts. Every intersection's a nuisance, whether it's a traffic light or whether it's a roundabout. But the real problem is that this particular roundabout is a folly. It's expensive, it's a waste of land, and it's in an area where it's not needed. Where roundabouts are typically needed are places where there's a lot of traffic and there's a number of intersections. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go around this roundabout now and take you through the different sides of this intersection. So roundabout will have four exits. Well, the first one is for a road that now you people are projecting won't be created until 2035. So the current projection from Hanson Engineering, the construction of Project B to Route 45 is 2035. So that's reduced the number of roads coming in and out of this to three. The next thing is the road to the north is Lincoln Avenue, which is, as the previous speaker said, is a narrow tar and chip road. So we don't want to be diverting any extra traffic onto that road. Coming back the other way is what's called Project X. Now, Project X is going to happen in the current plans 2 years after Project A, which is the Olympian Drive Bridge, you know, $10, $15 million to go a few hundred yards, and it'll just simply terminate on Lincoln Avenue. Again, a tar and chip road with some very sharp bends from which trucks are banned. So, in other words, heading south for 2 years at least, and maybe there's enough trouble with this whole thing. You know, you've got to find $2.2 million of local government money to build Project X, don't forget. So it may never happen. But at least for 2 years, there's only one thing you can do at this roundabout. You can come over the $10, $20 million bridge. You can go around the roundabout and go back again because you can't go onto any of the other roads. So if we're lucky, there'll be two roads at this intersection. If we're unlucky, and certainly for 2 years, it's just a roundabout where you turn around and go back. So this is a classic sort of roundabout to nowhere. It's expensive, and if there were a lot of them around the town, it might be a nice idea. And it strikes me as being another one of these, I won't mention anybody's names in particular, but you know who I'm talking about, another folly initiated by the people in the Urbana City Council. But what I want to also mention is already this plan for a few hundred yards going from the end of the existing Limping Drive and ending nowhere on this Tar and Chip Road, Lincoln Avenue, is going to take 51 acres of farming land. The right of way is going to be four lanes wide, and you're building a two-lane roundabout. Now, what happens when it's expanded to four lanes? Are we going to dig it up and turn it into a four-lane roundabout? So you're going to take land, 51 acres of land, borrow pits, all sorts of stuff, and then take that across to a two-lane roundabout, which there are only two exits anyhow. The Farm Bureau apparently today, long conversations with them, they're opposed because to the 51 acres we're adding even more farmland that's going to be taken away for this roundabout, and presumably we won't be growing corn in the middle of the roundabout. It'll be taking corn on the edge of the roundabout. But also one issue is even this funny L-shape event. What I want to do is I want to direct you in this little handout of mine to page 3, if I could do that. And there's a little drawing there which shows you the nature of this route. So it's the yellow route. So Project X is the curly bit down the bottom. And then that becomes Project A, which heads left. But look, honestly, what's going to happen is this traffic system is going to, if you're heading north onto 57, you can see that it takes, to reach the Market Street exit, it's going to take 6.5 miles. And who on earth is going to take a 6.5 mile route when your GPS tells you if you go straight ahead and up along Fort Harris Road, it's going to take 4.2 miles. So this is a system which is going to inevitably direct traffic onto a tar and chip road through the roundabout, and no one's ever going to use this very expensive bridge and the roundabout in the middle of it. So that's a real problem. The second thing that I want to mention is Fort Harris Road at the moment has a count of 950 cars a day. And that's because it joins up with Route 45. This is not going to join up with Route 45 until 2035. So any of those cars taking Fort Harris Road, are they going to head south and head across this fancy bridge and roundabout? Not likely. So there's going to be very, very little traffic there in the near future, and certainly a lot less than the 950 that crosses Fort Harris Road. Bradley Avenue, with no bridge, 11,700 cars and multiple fatalities, right? And here we are building this bridge and roundabout and this whole fancy infrastructure when those 950 cars are not even going to travel on this road because it doesn't make sense. You can see the map. No one's going to use it. So not only do we have a bridge to nowhere, we're now going to have a roundabout to nowhere as well. So I would just say that in terms of a number of issues, which is the cost of this folly, the additional land that's going to be taken up with this folly, I would counsel very hard, very much, that you don't do it. I might say also, if you have a look on page 4, I've got a picture of the road onto which traffic, if they head north out of the roundabout, that's the road they're going to be on. That's North Lincoln Avenue. And it's not really a great idea. So they're going to go through the roundabout. And by the way, to get to 57, they have to go through four stop signs. Heading north, they've got to go through another. So why have a roundabout when all there is for every 100 yards in every direction is another stop sign? So it's going to be a monument to a certain form of, well, I think you people know the story. Thank you very much for your time.
Mr. Harold Shaman.
Hello, my name is Harold Charlo. I live at 3610 North Lincoln Avenue. I'd like to read a letter. It's a little dated because it was to be presented the last time when the roundabouts were pre-talked about, but as I attended the last meeting of a whole meeting, I would like to clarify a point that was made at that meeting. It was presented to the board that the reason a roundabout was developed into the design of the Olympian Drive was that a round table meeting was held. A majority of the participants were in favor of that option. Several county board members questioned that statement. The information I am presenting can be found on the internet by doing the following process. If you look under Olympian Drive Project, you click on the roundtable meeting summary, and then you click on the Olympian Drive roundtable design options comments. You will find 75 statements there about the roundabout. 15 of those statements were made by Laura Huth, what at that point was representing us. Her comment is, if roundabouts can really be considered for this project, then we can certainly find all sorts of other innovative ideas and alternatives for this project or modified ones. This statement should not be viewed as an endorsement of roundabouts, and I did not include them, those 15 comments, in my statement. So that leaves 60 left. If you count those up, you will find there were 21 yeses, 30 no's, and 9 no comments. So I think that debunks that idea. I have several questions of the design of the roundabout. However, I feel that the board must first determine if they support this concept, because as Jess Blue stated at that meeting, he will be negotiating with Squire Farms, and the city of Urbana will be negotiating with Jimmy Heinberger for land acquisition. The property that belongs to Jimmy Heinberger lies completely east of Lincoln Avenue, and none of his land is required if the roundabout is not built. So when you talk about the cost of this project, you're going to have to look at several factors. Number one, they're buying, and I don't know what the total land is, but they're buying half of the roundabout is going to be from land that's not needed for this. All you need for this is a stop sign on Olympian Drive. Lincoln Avenue can continue just the way it is right now. You don't need any additional cost. I was just recently down in the villages in Florida, where it's loaded with roundabouts. Signage. Every intersection approaching the internet has one that says entering roundabout. Then they'll have another sign that tells you what route you should take to get around the roundabout, depending on where your location is. Okay? So there is at least 3 signs required on each entry into the roundabout. And again, the land use for that. And they also, I discovered down there that people will not use the roundabout the way it was designed to be used. They all stay in the outside lane because they don't want to get trapped on the inside lane. If you're going supposedly on Lincoln Avenue straight, you would supposedly enter the middle, go around. I'm sorry, that's wrong because there will be no exit to the east. I get confused myself. If you're going to go on Olympian Drive, you would go to the inside lane, go around the roundabout 270 degrees to exit. However, if another vehicle is coming south on Lincoln Avenue and going to exit on Olympian Drive, he's going to take the outside lane and block you from getting there. So what happens down there is you have 3 and 4 cars stacked up in the roundabout trying to make a right-hand turn because they will not get trapped on that inside lane. So, again, and another is pollution. Some of the literature I've read says that these reduce pollution. Part convinced me that a car going straight down Lincoln Avenue at 35 miles an hour with no stop sign pollutes more than a vehicle who has to slow down, go around the roundabout, extra mileage to go around the roundabout, and then accelerate to get back up to speed. It just doesn't make sense. And lastly, if this was such a good idea, why wasn't it ever considered for Curtis Road? Now, there's a perfect application for a roundabout if you're looking for more traffic usage, 4 entrances and exits and so forth. That's where this should have been discussed. But out in the country here where we have 950 cars a day and so forth on a road, it just doesn't make sense. So I thank you for your time. But again, I urge the board to really put this on your agenda as soon as possible to stop this, because, like I said, you're going to be acquiring land that will not be required if you vote down the roundabout. Thank you.
Gary Zico.
Yeah, hi, good evening. My name is Gary Zico from 506 West Vermont in Urbana, and I had some things to think about, consider for the roundabout, too. Why would anybody put a roundabout at Olympian and Lincoln? There are no roundabouts in Champaign County except for a few and some subdivisions out of the way. Many people don't driving through that intersection will have never seen a roundabout. National research has shown that residents overwhelmingly oppose the first roundabout that is built in the community. It's going to be large trucks and farm machinery. So why would you ever consider putting a roundabout there? Well, maybe because, in general, for roundabouts, federally funded research has shown that they can reduce injuries and fatalities by 80 to 90% over signalized intersections. So that's maybe one reason. FHWA has issued a memorandum to transportation agencies recommending consideration of roundabouts because they are a proven traffic safety countermeasure. We have 3,000 modern roundabouts in the U.S. There has not been a single pedestrian or bicyclist fatality reported at any of these roundabouts. Carmel, Indiana has 70 modern roundabouts. A recent poll done there showed that 90% of the residents support them. That's pretty amazing, 90%. You couldn't get 90% of people saying that the earth is round, I don't think. Closer to home, a recent report by QOTS indicated some unsatisfactory results for traffic crashes and air pollution because of increases in both of these when last measured. Also reported that many intersections in Urbana now are at unsatisfactory levels of service during the peak hours. Roundabouts are the only traffic engineering facility that can reduce serious and fatal crashes, reduce fuel use and air pollution, reduce delay, which is needed in our area here. And because of the reduced crashes, reduced delay, reduced fuel use, there's no need to operate and maintain signals. If a roundabout is used instead of signals, it's going to save considerable money in the long term. The organization I represent, Champaign County Bikes, supports roundabouts because of the safety advantages they provide for all users, especially bicyclists. One of the main things is you don't have people turning left in front of you when you're on a bicycle. Everybody's going in the same direction. And support for roundabouts at Urbana goes far beyond cyclists. We had an online petition with 52 supporters with a lot of people supporting the idea of roundabouts. Large trucks can handle roundabouts. I know nothing about farm machinery, so I'm interested in hearing about the presentation on how that's going to be done, but no problem with large trucks, probably design a roundabout. And lastly, a single lane roundabout can easily handle 25,000 vehicles per day. Roundabouts add significant capacity to single lane roads because congestion on the roads is not caused by having too few lanes. It's because of having to wait at stop signs and at traffic signals. So while the current traffic volume at Lincoln and Olympian is zero, if there is considerable traffic volume here in the future, roundabout could actually be the safest, most efficient, and most economical way to move traffic through the intersection if there's going to be considerable traffic volume. And actually, you don't have to widen roads. So the total footprint for high volume with a roundabout is actually less than traditional intersections. So why would anybody consider putting a roundabout there? There are some reasons. Other issues certainly have been raised, and I look forward to the further discussion about this. I have a brochure that I brought from the Federal Highways Administration that you might get a copy of, some basic information about roundabouts that could be useful. Thank you.
Leslie Cooper Band.
Good evening, and thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Leslie Cooper Band. I, with my husband, Wes Jarrell, own and operate Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery at 4410 North Lincoln Avenue. Prairie Fruits Farm is located about 200 yards north of the proposed roundabout on Lincoln Avenue. We employ over 10 staff, more than half of them full-time. We have hundreds of people coming out to our farm every year to visit the farm, starting next weekend, in fact. My husband and I are familiar with roundabouts, both urban and rural. In the case of my husband, there are two rural roundabouts near his parents' farm in Oregon. They both have four significant arteries feeding into them and have been successful in that respect. I grew up in Boston, a city full of roundabouts and extremely congested ancient city streets. There they serve the function of keeping traffic flowing in an orderly manner, thus relieving congestion. So roundabouts work best when there's a need to manage large volumes of traffic coming through multiple directions. So we are not inherently against roundabouts. It's the proposed location of a roundabout at the intersection of Olympian Drive and Lincoln Avenue that we take issue with. And it makes no sense for these reasons. As my neighbor, Bill Cope, pointed out, that at most two arteries would feed into this location for the foreseeable future, assuming that the realignment of North Lincoln Avenue would be completed in the time proposed. The eastern extension of Olympian Drive to Highway 45 has no immediate plans for completion, and moving north on Lincoln Avenue is, as has been stated, a chip and tar road with limited traffic access. Spending large amounts of money on this large roundabout for only two directions of traffic is an enormous waste of resources. Moreover, we are particularly concerned that the roundabout may impede emergency vehicle access north of the proposed roundabout, for example, fire trucks, police vehicles, and ambulances. That may preclude them from getting to our property in the event of an emergency in a timely manner. Although we see no need for this road project overall, if the road were to be completed, a curve makes much more sense than a roundabout, as our resident group proposed several years ago. Also, locating the curve several hundred yards to the west of the current proposed site still makes the most sense. Initially, our response to the whole Olympian Drive extension project was personal and professional. It would change the character of our rural area and destroy precious farmland. On further review, we realized that there are large tracts of industrial land already served with roads and utilities in northern Champaign suitable for the same kind of development as proposed on North Lincoln by the city of Urbana. Until the land west of the railroad tracks is developed, an expensive railroad bridge extending a rural road with almost no traffic makes no sense. All of these concerns beg the question, if Urbana and Champaign acted as one municipality instead of two, would this road extension even be discussed? The pointless and expensive economic competition between these two cities creates massive inefficiencies and misallocation of resources. We feel that the entire Olympian project, including the roundabout, exemplifies these problems and should be tabled indefinitely. Thank you.
Martel Miller.
Martel Miller, General Delivery.
I'm going to speak on the comment that Jury said last week about token minorities. I feel that she should remove herself from anything to do with the county board by being on any kind of committee, especially doing anything dealing with people of minorities. And she feel like because someone asked to have minorities on there, they'd be token. That was a racial comment. And for y'all not to think about doing any kind of racial studies on anything to do with the jails, to vote that down, I think y'all need to revisit that, because minorities, more than 50 to 60% of that jail, and there'll probably be 50% or more of your new jails, and that's something the county board, y'all the whole county, and that's something that needs to be looked at. With the quarter cent tax, that was put on the ballot, voted in by the people of this county. It was took away in 2003 by the people that was on the county board. Now there's new people on this county board that should speak out and said, you know, we should give that back to the voters and put on a referendum and the sunset take place procedure and start it over, put it back on the referendum, let the voters vote what this money should be used for. The county jail numbers have been down for over probably 7 years. Let the sheriff tell y'all what he really wants this jail for, because it's something going through the United States with these illegal immigrants, that they're going to have them be accepted in this country. And they're going to have to pay their way. And they're going to use a way where they're going to charge them. and they can't put them in state penitentiaries. They don't be able to put them in federal jails and county jails. And that's how they're going to make their money. And I don't think our community should be one of the ways that they should be using our county jails to make money. You know, jail is for people committing crimes and not for people to be stored to make money on. To me, I think it's, y'all should take a look at the new Jim Crow book by Michelle Alexander and read what's going on with our justice system. And I'm going to leave it like that. Thank you.
Brian Dulliner.
Good evening. My name is Brian Dulliner. I live at 303 West Locust in Urbana. And I'm happy to congratulate the county board and the Justice Committee for following through with this proposed committee that's being chosen and announced tonight. We have some concern, as Daryl Cruz had mentioned, about the lack of real teeth in this committee. You know, I think, one, it's good that we do have a more broad approach to the criminal justice problems. I'm very aware of the jury committee that's been doing work here via the Champaign County Board. But there's an obvious need, as you've heard from several commenters, for a broadening of the debate around the criminal justice system in Champaign County. Hopefully this committee will do it, and hopefully you can also invest them with some teeth, some binding capacity to the jail committee being formed through justice, or rather through facilities, and hopefully there's some dialogue, some back and forth between them. As I understand, members of the jail project planning team, before it was officially announced, these members have been meeting behind closed doors with no minutes being kept, everything being kept off record. That's a slight to the public, and the public deserves to know where this $20 million is going to be spent. I've filed a FOIA request, so if there is any information, minutes being collected, any information, I would like it for purposes of the public knowing its own business. Also concerned that the committee being formed tonight does not have any kind of access to finances. Hopefully there will be some opportunity that if there's a need of an expert, somebody to come from outside to assess the jail population, the concerns at the Champaign County Courthouse, that there will be some access to funds, that some expertise can be brought in. I know that very well the problems in the city of Champaign in trying to get some outside expert for $85,000 to explain a choking incident that happened in the back of a squad car over last summer. You know, I don't think it's necessarily a good idea to spend $85,000 on an expert when I'd rather see that money being spent on summer programming for youth. I'm not in favor of big price tag experts, but it shouldn't be too hard to find somebody in Chicago who's an expert in this field to come give some advice and some outside analysis to our very serious situation in Champaign County. Thank you.
Okay, we've run out of time. We've had an hour. Thank you very much. Next up is communications from the board. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have three announcements. Today I spent some time in Monticello at the Mohammed Valley Water Authority. After long discussion, I asked that they make a motion to accept the intergovernmental agreement and join us in the opposition to the PCB landfill in the Clinton landfill in Piatt County. They voted unanimously to join our coalition in opposition to that landfill. I want to thank the Mohammed Valley Water Authority for joining the coalition. Also, I have a letter here from Joseph Hooker, attorney of Champaign City, who tells me that the Bloomington City Council has also voted to join our coalition against the PCB landfill. We've now expanded this jurisdiction to a number of new entities, which will lower the cost to us here in Champaign County. and we're hoping for many more jurisdictions to join us. Today, coming home from Monticello, I used Monticello Road, and while I was on Monticello Road, I called Mr. Jeff Blue and asked him how the upgrade of Monticello Road and our lowering of the speed limit at I-57 and Monticello Road had an effect on the accident rate that was quite prevalent prior to the upgrade. His comments were quite astounding in the fact that he has not heard of one single accident on Monticello Road since the upgrade of that road. So I think that obviously was a wonderful project that helped us to avoid serious accidents on Monticello Road. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other announcements? A couple announcements. First, I failed to mention that Mr. Mosier and Mr. McGinty could not make the meeting tonight. Also, there's Storm Spotter training. This is for County Board members if you are interested. Storm Spotter training at 6:30 on March 15th at the Ilias building. So March 15th. Leave your own storm at home, please.
So that's p.m.
Pardon? 6:30 p.m., yeah. Okay, any more announcements or communications? Okay, let's move on to Highway. Ms. Kohler.
Good evening. The first thing for Highway and Transportation is the monthly report for the county and township motor fuel tax claim for February 2012.
Make a motion, accept those and put them on file.
Second.
Motion and second. It's open for any discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Next, we're going to go into the county engineer's report, and we're going to make number four number one.
All right, so we're going to move number four up to the beginning of my presentation, and we have tonight, based on the last committee of the whole meeting, there was some discussion, obviously, about the roundabout at Olympian and Lincoln. So I've asked Matt Hyen from Hansen Engineering to come along with Mark Johnson, who is working with Hansen Engineering as a roundabout expert, to come and do a brief presentation about roundabouts in general, but more specifically roundabout that is proposed at the Olympian Drive and Lincoln Avenue intersection. So if you guys would come up and we can get started. Just give them a second here to get the projector turned on. They've got a PowerPoint presentation that they'd like to go through.
Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, that the consensus was that there wasn't much interest in a roundabout from this board. Was that correct in my consensus?
No. This is just a presentation.
But, I mean, why are we going to have a presentation if there's no interest? Why put the gentleman through that if we're not interested in having a roundabout?
Okay, we never did have a vote on that.
Well, I thought we had a...
Show
it
to you.
Can we have a show of hands to see who does want a roundabout? Because I can't. My thing is, why sit through a presentation if the majority of the board is not in favor of it?
It's my understanding from the last meeting that you guys wanted somebody to come and inform you about this roundabout.
I don't recall. Does anybody else recall that? I may be out of line here.
I agree with you.
You're the chair. I'm just asking.
Going with the presentation.
Okay.
Good evening. My name is Mark Johnson with MTJ Engineering. As Jeff indicated, I'm a roundabout design engineer, traffic engineer. I've been involved with roundabouts for about 15 years, and along with general traffic and transportation engineering. I've worked for city and state municipalities. I'm in my eighth year in my own firm called MTJ Engineering. I've been involved with many projects all across the U.S. and up in Canada. It's a recent project that opened up showing a roundabout. You can see in the upper right-hand corner there. It's kind of a rural transition area, suburban community to Madison, a bedroom community called Cottage Grove. Three roundabouts, two ramp terminals. You can see a diverse application there of the ramp terminals, and then also the intersection of two county roads on the right-hand side, with some multi-lane and some single-lane entries. A few other projects I've been involved with, just showing different types of applications, county trunk highways and state trunk highways, with semis, rural areas, areas with here's another project off of I-94 west of Milwaukee, the Conemaugh area. You can see the roundabout up on the north side there is part of a growing area, new growth expected out in that area. But the roundabout down in the far right-hand bottom corner is a single-lane roundabout, and then you have multi-roundabouts. So quite a diverse set of roundabouts there. And another application in a downtown setting in Conemaugh, just a few locations. So, you know, we're just going to go through. We've got about 15 minutes here, pretty brief, of, you know, what are roundabouts, why use them. They reduce delay. They improve safety. That's been mentioned here tonight, both to address vehicular, pedestrian, bicycle modes of traffic. When you deal with intersections, you deal with access issues and truck and freight movements as well. You can have fuel savings with reduced delay with the operations of roundabouts and reduced travel time as well. So we'll look at some examples. Sometimes people mentioned earlier Boston. This is not quite Boston. This is the L'Arc de Triomphe in Paris, France. This was built in ancient times, pre-automobile. It's not what's called a modern roundabout. Traffic calming circles, not roundabouts either. They're circular, but trucks, large vehicles have a difficult time with those. These sometimes the smaller roundabouts in subdivisions appear to resemble modern roundabouts with their features, but they often can also be impediments to larger vehicles such as truck deliveries, et cetera, and can be problematic in that regard. So in the 30s to the 50s, we built a large traffic circle there. You can see the large circle. It's about 600 feet in diameter. And that was replaced by the smaller 200-foot diameter roundabout in the middle of that larger circle. The smaller circle has higher, could process more traffic more efficiently than that large, old, non-conforming traffic circle is what we call them. Presently, the old non-conforming traffic circle was the precursor to the modern interchange. It used a weaving type a design at the entries and exits. But as the traffic flows increased and the suspension systems got better, those became problematic. The Brits didn't abandon roundabouts; they kept studying them. So that roundabout in the middle is based on about 30, 40 years of engineering science, primarily out of the UK. So there's circular intersections with very specific design criteria used to control traffic. Traffic control is a term used for stop signs and signals, which you all are probably familiar with. So based on 50 years of engineering science, much of it from the UK. Here's a video clip that shows that was produced by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation to discuss farm equipment and large trucks in roundabouts. I'm not going to turn on the audio. But you can see the pink area in the central island that's being highlighted in yellow there. That's called the truck apron. And you can see the tire marks on the truck apron are there for a reason. It's designed for the large trucks and larger vehicles to be able to navigate through the roundabouts. This information is on the web. People can link onto this. They have some interviews from truck drivers talking about their experiences through these roundabouts. Same thing with maintenance issues, snow plowing. The snow plow driver here is, you know, my experience with snow plow drivers is they're often a little concerned about, you know, how they're going to plow it. Experience across the nation in the northern climates has been it's really quite efficient to remove the snow from the roundabout. Emergency response vehicles, often a concern, but they don't have any problems navigating the roundabouts. With the less congestion and delay, they come through. Their response times are quite good. There have been examples of poorly designed roundabouts that don't allow trucks to go through, and they give all roundabouts a bad name. So we use design software to simulate large trucks, freight, farm equipment, and to make sure that we design to accommodate those vehicles. This is a project southwestern Wisconsin, a town called Mount Horb, State Trunk Highway. Just showing a couple of trucks going through that roundabout. It's the same roundabout where you just saw the simulation of the roundabouts. And that's the same kind of design criteria we apply at the project under discussion. That village, after their initial roundabout, they put in four more after they put that one, and they liked it so much. Although there's no pedestrians currently with the roundabout under discussion here, I have this video clip in. It shows a couple of kids on bikes. They look like they're, you know, maybe 10 or a little less in age, and traversing through this roundabout. You can see sort of how it operates for these kids and vehicles slowing for them to let them cross through that two-stage crossing. With that, I'll hand it over to Matt.
I'm Matt Hine. I'm the project engineer with Hanson Engineers. I just wanted to show you some of the specifics about what we're working on for the Olympian Drive and Lincoln Avenue roundabout. Specifically, with regards to trucks, you can see there in the large picture, that's the design vehicle. They call it a WB65. It's about 73.5 feet long, 8.5 feet wide, and you can see here you've got the black lines. Those show kind of the geometry of the roundabout. The blue line is the truck and how it maneuvers through. You can see that it does use a truck apron, just like the video showed, so large trucks would be able to navigate through. Here's just another example of right turns. Again, you can see the black is the geometry, some of the pavement marking you can see. And just like a traditional intersection, there's a section of a painted area near the medians that the trucks can oversteer into that allow them to maneuver through the radiuses. We talked about farm equipment, actually specifically some of the requests from the adjacent property owner of this. These were some of the specific vehicles he wanted us to check. We actually designed this in our auto turn program that allows to show what these farm vehicles would be able to do. This is a track tractor, 22.5 feet long, 12 feet wide, with a DB90 planter. That's a 36-row planter. The transport width is actually 15 feet, and it's about 55 feet long, so the combination of those two. You can see, again, the black lines is the geometry. The blue line is how that tractor and planter tracks through on a left-hand turn. You can see that he can oversteer. The back of the planter actually goes across a truck apron just like it's designed, and they'll be able to make that through. We'll go back just to show the right-hand turns and the through movement. Same thing. There is enough physical pavement out there to show that it can make it. Also, the adjacent property owner wants to look at a combine, typically with a corn row, an eight-row corn head on it. Sometimes farmers in the rural areas don't like to disconnect their equipment and like to roll down the road with it, and that's fine. What we're showing here is the combine with an eight-row corn head on it can easily fit through the geometry of the roundabout. There's actually enough room between the signs and any of the lighting that would provide approximately about 30 feet of width for any farm implement to make it through. We just wanted to show a quick comparison of some of the other intersections along Olympian Drive and the actual footprint of the roundabout, so you can kind of see the differences between the two. This is at Market Street, and looking at this one, you see that the geometry of our roundabout Olympian Lincoln superimposed on top of the aerial, you can see the footprint is actually pretty similar. The next one will show the overall footprint of the intersection. But if you look at right-of-way needs because of the turn lanes that would be necessary at the intersection, you can see that we're actually would require less right-of-way at this specific location. Here you can see a difference in the footprint. This is based off of the existing turn lanes that are out there. The blue shows the footprint where the turn lanes start to develop on the north, on the west, and on the south side. The green is essentially the footprint of what the roundabout would be. You don't need nearly as long to develop. You don't have any turn lanes as everything is a single lane movement. The yellow areas along the inside is actually additional pavement you would need at the actual intersection for the roundabout, but the red areas are the locations where you wouldn't need pavement that, that the traditional intersection needs, especially the large circle in the middle that would be landscaped. So you're looking at about 1,100 square yards, less pavement area. There's no signal at this. So if you look at just a straight cost of pavement and right-of-way, it would be actually be about $100,000 less at this location. We also looked at Prospect. Again, we just superimposed our geometry right on top of that intersection, and you can see that it's pretty close. There is some additional needed pavement on the outsides, but again, there would be a little bit less right-of-way. And again, the same thing with the footprint. It's a less of a footprint for the roundabout than a traditional intersection because of the length you need to develop the turn lanes. Again, yellow is additional pavement needed for the roundabout. Red is additional pavement that would be unnecessary for the roundabout. So you got about 600 square yards less pavement, and because this is a traffic signal, you don't have those costs for the roundabout, so it'd be about $200,000 less. So with that, if you guys have any questions for Mark or myself.
Okay, we're going to go with...
I have a question here, please.
Stephanie Paul.
You stated that it's $200,000 less because we're going to use less concrete. $200,000 less than what?
What we did is we took a look at just simply the less right-of-way that would be required and the less amount of pavement that would be required for this roundabout, along with the less amount of traffic signals. If you were to build the same thing, it would be $200,000 less to build that at that location.
So if we didn't have a roundabout there... Well, let's put it this way. How much is a roundabout versus a regular four-way stop sign? What's the comparison dollar-wise?
That's why I looked at both the Prospect Avenue, which is signalized, and Market Street, which is unsignalized. There's just stop sign control. It'd be about $100,000 less. There's no traffic signal there.
That's not my question. My question is total dollars for a roundabout versus total dollars for a four-way stop sign. Or intersection.
I would have to get back to you on that.
Okay, Ryan.
How efficient would it be if you have a 73-foot truck turning at a regular stop sign crossroad? How efficient would it be to make that right-hand or left-hand turn on a vehicle that's about 73 feet, you know, semi, 73 feet long?
How efficient?
Yeah. It seems like the roundabout would be a lot more easier to take that truck and turn it around because of that smaller inner red circle that you were indicating. But if it was just a cross section where you have two stop signs or stop lights, how feasible would it be for a 75-foot truck to either turn right or turn left?
You're asking how feasible would it be for the truck to turn at a signal? Or, yeah?
At that particular
well, in either case, they would be designed to accommodate,
The
large truck. So, they're both designed to accommodate that truck.
The intersections that you see in the aerial underneath, those have all been designed. All of these have been designed for the same design vehicle. So you can see that the footprint is about the same. So even if you didn't have a roundabout, the actual footprint of the intersection would still need to be that wide to allow the trucks to be able to make the left-hand turns or to make the right-hand turns without encroaching on other traffic.
Okay, Al.
Yeah, thank you. I have a couple of questions. One, we're not talking about Market Street or Prospect. We're talking about Olympia Drive at Lincoln Avenue. For the next 2 to 3 years, there's only going to be one lane going in there. That would be over the bridge and to this so-called roundabout. So whatever traffic comes over there is going to make a left turn, keep going, and then go back over the bridge. There's no connection at this point in the next 2 years to Lincoln Avenue, to that roundabout. Now, I noticed that in the picture you had pedestrians. I don't know if there are going to be two people walking out there in the next 2 to 3 years, so I don't understand why. You know, pedestrians really aren't a problem at this location. Also, traffic patterns. Most of the roundabouts that you showed us, and I'm familiar with the Clonemawoc and those roundabouts. I spent time in England, and I've seen those roundabouts. Those are made for heavy trafficked areas. I lived in Washington, D.C. for 11 years, and they have roundabouts. And I remember on one of those roundabouts near Virginia Avenue, I got stuck for about 15 minutes trying to get out of that roundabout. I tell you, I was stuck on the inside. I couldn't get out. It was pretty unbelievable. But there's heavy traffic in those areas. The area we're talking about now is going to be, you're not going to see a car going by there for perhaps an hour or two. So I'm wondering why, at this point, with no extension going east, with no road of any type, really, other than a chip road going north, and with Lincoln Avenue not being attached to this roundabout for maybe 2 to 3 years, I'm wondering why we need to have a roundabout at all at this point. I mean, I think it's absolutely premature to put a roundabout that it dead ends at the roundabout.
When we do intersection designs for IDOT or for local agency projects, we're required to do a long-term planning horizon for that. So we're not just looking for the next few years. We're actually looking 10, 20 years down the road. So it's beyond, even though the next couple of years before Lincoln Avenue will get extended, it's beyond that time frame. It's long-term with some of the information that Kuwatz has provided for us on traffic.
Comments or questions. The first one is, knowing where this area is and living out in a rural area, and I heard you talk about snow removal, I can't imagine our county staff keeping up with the winds and the snow blowing, because there are times I know that they've declared roads closed through the time. So that would be one of my major concerns. The other concern is that when this board looked at the plans that were presented to us, I never saw a roundabout. It was never discussed, to my knowledge. We had a road and a bridge and some other things. So it seems like to me that as this is progressing, that there is possibly a minority of stakeholders that are calling the shots for all of us that are making the decisions, and I don't think that should be done.
One thing, this will not be a county road when it's built, neither Olympian Drive nor Lincoln Avenue when it's extended up to Olympian Drive. They will both be... I'm just saying, he's asking me how the county trucks are going to plow it. The other thing is, you can't get into an intersection design study until you pick the alignments of the roadways. And until we got to the point where Olympian Drive and Lincoln Avenue, we knew where they were going to intersect, and they actually did the ADT or the traffic projections and those types of things, you can't get into an intersection design study. An intersection design study actually has to be a specific design that is done at a specific intersection after you've chosen your routes. So we couldn't have done the intersection design study before we figured out where this road was going to go and how it was going to intersect. So what you saw when we were looking at the different alignments were basically lines on a sheet of paper. No, we didn't draw a circle at where Lincoln Avenue and Olympian Drive intersected, but we hadn't gotten to that point yet.
I guess the question I have is not... I'm sorry.
My question is, what role does the county board have in addressing the question of whether or not a roundabout is built? What is our function in regard to this?
We're partners in this project for the Olympian Drive project. We have, as you know, state and federal money in the project, but there's no county money in the project. I have been tagged it to do the right-of-way acquisition negotiations with the Squire family. Mr. Gray is doing the right-of-way acquisition with the Heimberger family. And as a matter of fact, regardless of whether we build the Olympian Drive roundabout or whether we put in a standard intersection, the property that's needed from Jim Heimberger is somewhere under 1 acre, like 0.7 acres or somewhere in that neighborhood. So I guess it's good neighbor policy is kind of what we're talking about right here. We're in this project with Champaign, Urbana, and the county. Do we actually sign an intersection design study? Do I sign anything? No, it's not going to be our road. So I think this is so that everybody is on the same page going forward with this project.
I guess that was my question is, what action, if any, can the county board take with regard to roundabouts, straightaways, T-intersections? Is there something we're going to be asked to vote on?
No, I don't believe there's anything that I am going to ask you to vote on. The question came up at the caucus before the last Committee of the Whole meeting, was brought to my attention during the Committee of the Whole meeting about the roundabout, so I felt it prudent to try to answer the questions that were proposed to me, because I'm not a roundabout expert. There were a lot of questions at the last meeting. I felt like I needed to get you guys the answers to those questions, and that's why these gentlemen are here tonight.
Thank you.
Okay, Jeff Kibler.
My question's just been answered. Thank you.
Okay, Benson.
I'm going to ask Tom's question maybe a little more directly. If this board was asked to vote and we voted no on a roundabout, do we have any say in that? Does that carry any weight? Does that stop the project? Does that change it to an intersection? Or does it just simply say, we don't want it, but it doesn't really matter?
It's a question that's, I guess you got to go, I mean, it's just like anything else. When we're talking about fringe road projects, you know how many times we've been down this road with different projects. It may change the scope or the direction that it goes, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to change the overall look of the project. Obviously, the engineers within the cities of Urbana-Champaign and myself work together on projects like this. We work well together. We hope that the elected bodies will obviously work well together, and this is a project where everybody's coming together to try to do something for the good of the entire community. It's not going to be a county road, but it is obviously out in the county. We do have to purchase the right-of-way in the name of the county to be able to build this, but as you've been shown on this slideshow, there isn't any great additional need for right-of-way to construct a roundabout at this intersection versus a standard intersection.
Just one follow-up real quick. I mean, my personal feeling is I kind of like roundabouts. I mean, I don't really have a problem with roundabouts. I think that they do work well in certain areas. I just can't imagine it stuck out in the country there. I mean, we could say what we want about that. That thing is out in the country, period. And it's going to be in the country for many, many years to come. So and no one has sold me yet on these traffic projections that have been thrown out there, but I'm a pessimist. I guess I'll believe it when I see it. You know, I think there's a lot of places in Champaign-Urbana where something like this would make some sense. I just can't even fathom it out there.
Okay, Rapidine, Queensbury.
Some of this discussion has implied that there's doubt as to whether this Lincoln Avenue is going to be extended up to Olympian Drive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Am I correct in my impression that the railroad crossing and Olympian Drive up to Lincoln Avenue and Lincoln Avenue from
the south are set and will be completed, and that we will have to have some kind of an interchange between those two. Is that a
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, the county board voted on both of the projects. We picked an alignment for the Lincoln Avenue project. We're going through the Illinois Commerce Commission hearings currently for the $16 million bridge over the railroad. You know, it's a fair statement to say that, that this board and the city councils from both cities have chosen to move ahead with the projects.
Okay, so the arguments that have been advanced to the effect that there's doubt as to whether these roads are going to be completed are not founded in fact. That we don't need an interchange because the roads aren't going to be completed.
We voted to move forward with the project.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
All right, I got a couple things, so bear with me here. My first question to the engineers, one of our public speakers earlier, I don't know if you heard them, spoke about a piece of equipment that's 40 feet wide. And I assume that that's a spreader that's not set up for traveling. It's left open. But if someone wanted to move a piece of equipment from the north side to the south side that was 40 feet wide, I didn't see how that could possibly move through that intersection.
A 40-foot wide implement would have problems getting through the intersection, but I would also say it probably have issues north and south of the intersection with the width of the right-of-way and meeting any traffic as well.
All right. And, Jeff, you mentioned something about being good neighbors. One of the things I think we committed to when we said we would go ahead was getting the input of the local residents on
right.
Where the line exactly goes, make sure it doesn't vary from whatever color we ended up on. I think it was purple maybe. But I think if I look at the input from back when the roundtables happened, there's a clear local bias against having a roundabout there. Are we going to give those residents another opportunity to give input on this design? Or are we going? Should we point back to that to say, this area, the folks in this area, do not feel like they're going to benefit from a roundabout?
Excuse me if I am a little bit truthful here. The folks who are here that don't want the roundabout don't want the road, and this is another way to say they don't want the road. That's my opinion as your county engineer. As far as the 40-foot head on a tractor, I don't have a bridge in the county that's 40 feet wide, so they can't be driving around the county with that thing on the road. So I don't know where that came from either. But it came out of the public process. If we move ahead with the intersection design study and move ahead with a roundabout, we're going to be spending money that is going to be wasteful if we're going to come back and say, now we're not going to use a roundabout. You know, these things take time. They take money. We've obviously hired a professional who has been doing this for a good portion of his professional career in order to be able to design the roundabout appropriately for all these implements, for all these farm tractors, for all these truck drivers. We went so far tonight as well as to ask a local trucker, Tom Franny from Franny Trucking, who transports petroleum products and other commodities within about a 200-mile radius of Champaign County. We've asked him to come in case there's some specific questions that you guys might have about how trucks that are large would be able to navigate a roundabout in this area.
Well, that's a good lead into my next item, and I only have one more after this. So, and I would agree, Jeff, that the folks who are here talking to us about the roundabout didn't want the road, but because they didn't want the road, I think we should be more sensitive to their concerns about how the design plays out in the area that's basically their backyard. I have no question that a roundabout is feasible here, that trucks can go around it, that vehicles of a certain size can go around it. It's not the feasibility of whether we can put a roundabout there. It's whether it makes sense or not. I have not been persuaded yet, even if we're looking 20 years out, that that a roundabout in this location makes sense. In the rural areas that I'm familiar with, in a situation like this where you have a main road that basically has a right angle to another main road and a lesser used road, it's preferred to have a wide curve with an intersection for the lesser used road. That's how you discourage people from using the lesser used road, the tar and chip North Lincoln Road. Why isn't that in the options of plans that we're looking at, so that, you know, trucks can go around that curve north and south, and they're not encouraged at any point of saying, oh, I could go on north here, because everybody agrees we don't want them doing that, right?
Right.
So why isn't a wide sweeping curve with a stop sign for North Lincoln in the options that are considered?
I don't see how that is better. I don't know that the arguments that I've heard here tonight tend to tell me that a roundabout, what good argument do we have here that we don't want a roundabout? It takes up less land. It costs less money. There won't be a need for signals there. It has less pavement, less right-of-way, less cost. I'm not sure where the arguments for having a traditional intersection versus a roundabout are that have merit. Well, these gentlemen are standing here giving you the merit of a roundabout, and I've heard the public presentation from the public before this, but I'm not sure where the arguments that a roundabout isn't necessary here really trump over a roundabout.
Well, I appreciate your feeling that way. I feel a different way. So
I'm right.
Okay, stay in.
Well, I guess, Jeff, I would just say my argument would be, as we heard earlier, there was bigger roundabouts that didn't do what they were supposed to do. Just because we're given an opinion doesn't mean it's the gospel.
Right.
So common sense, in my book, from out in the rural area, kicks in. And no difference to you gentlemen. You did a good job, and I respect your work. But we got to look at the folks that are going to have to live around it, use it. Personally, I wasn't for the road either, so count me in that block. But as far as a roundabout, me, if I was coming late at night and I didn't see it, I'm going to go right through the center of that thing and tear up my tires. So that's my point on that.
Okay, Aaron?
Yes. Thank you. I guess the one argument against it, and it's been brought up, the 40-foot wide platform on a combine. Olympian Road is going to divide this field in half. That will necessitate moving from the north to the south or south to the north, whichever field you harvest first. Okay, you're talking maybe eighth of a mile. Do you want to spend, think about this, if you're a farmer, do you want to spend the time it takes to demount this 40-foot platform, which, to remount it, you're likely going to be sitting on the road, blocking the road, to remount your platform? Do you want to take the time to demount this platform, put it back on the combine, when in a period of light traffic, you can just buzz through that intersection in a couple minutes, pull right back into the field, start your combine up, and go harvest beans or shell corn if you've got a slightly smaller head on your combine, probably 30 foot maximum, actually a little over. But that's the issue with the big, wide farm equipment. It takes time. Time is money. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but certain times of the year, if you aren't being productive as a farmer, you're losing hundreds, if not almost thousands, of dollars an hour for the time that you're sitting still. So that's where they're coming from with the big equipment idea. We don't have that at home. We aren't that big, but I know where it comes from, and I have to respect that. Thank you.
It's a T-intersection. None of the examples they've shown is there a T-intersection. And it just seems to me that it doesn't, especially, you know, where you have farm equipment, that we don't need it for a T-intersection.
Okay, Chris.
Just to answer your question, Jeff, I would say that the reason that we don't need a roundabout is that
The reason it seems like we don't need a roundabout here is that we could point to hundreds of similar intersections in Champaign County which don't have a roundabout at them and which have more advantages, which would offer more advantages to a roundabout than this intersection would, such as actually having four road connections. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying not to lose sight of the fact that for the foreseeable future, and I think we're talking about, you know, 15 or 20 years at a minimum, this is going to be an intersection of two. It's essentially barely an intersection. I mean, it's two well-built and presumably increasingly traveled rural highways, if we can use that term, and one unlikely to be substantially upgraded ever, oil and chip road to the north, and nothing to the east. And I just, it's very difficult for me to understand how we can make a business case, as it were, for a roundabout at an intersection where 99% of the traffic is either going to turn left or turn right because there's only two real roads going there. And I guess I'm a little bit frustrated by the fact that I feel like if the engineers had been told to look at this project and build what makes sense, we'd have a T-intersection. But because they were told, look at this project and, oh, yeah, by the way, the city council likes roundabouts, they're, look, it's going to be a roundabout, right? I mean, I don't think you can make the case that the advantages that we claim to attach to roundabouts, many of which I believe, actually attach to this intersection where we've really only effectively got two roads and we'll only have two roads for decades.
Okay, John Jay and Lynn Maxwell.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've got a lot of concern with this. First of all, we talked about this road and these intersections for a long time, and never was roundabouts mentioned until they become popular with one of the entities that's within this group of governments that's trying to work together. Every time we try to work together with them, they end up trying to take us down the pea patch. Now, you say we're not going to own any of this. It's not going to cost us a dime. I doubt that that happens, but I hope you're right. But I'm really going to be uncomfortable if the board decides that we don't want roundabouts or we don't think they're necessary, and you're out there telling those people that they're going to have a roundabout and you're going to condemn the ground to take it. You're representing the county. Now, that's going to put us all in a quandary.
That's what I said. That's the one thing, is the right-of-way acquisition. But if I go out and buy the right-of-way today, I would be buying the same amount regardless of whether it's a roundabout or an intersection. So that decision didn't have to be made in order to establish the limits of the right-of-way that's needed for the intersection, I guess.
Well, could I follow up? Are you buying right-of-way to put a T-intersection in there, a roundabout intersection in there, or a four-way intersection in there?
I'm buying right-of-way to have an intersection, and it doesn't matter
what intersection is put in. It does matter because of the size, Jeff.
John, the right-of-way is the same regardless of the intersection.
No, it isn't. If it's a T-intersection, you don't need the road going the other way. If you do a roundabout, it's going to take more area than a T-intersection.
In order to do an intersection here, you can't just build Olympian Drive and bring in an oil and chip road 20 feet wide into it. IDOT will not allow that to happen. There is absolutely no way that that would ever get approved. You still have to build an asphalt intersection coming from the north, regardless of how much traffic is going to go that way when you're bringing Olympian Drive in from the west.
So you're going to spend as much to build that stretch north that is it going to cost to put a roundabout in? You're not making real good sense to me, Jeff.
By his figures, and he showed them, and I don't have any reason to believe he's not telling me the truth, the roundabout actually comes out to be of a lesser cost. Am I right, Matt? Then a standard intersection, am I correct?
Right.
Is going to actually be more expensive than this roundabout.
If you just ignore the right-hand side of the aerial photo and the intersection, that's essentially the same thing that you would have at Lincoln. And like I showed you, that the actual footprint is going to go beyond what the roundabout is because you have to generate the turn lanes that would then be necessary that you don't need with the roundabout.
Okay, Maxwell.
Thank you. I've got a couple questions of Jeff. You've kind of answered them, and this may be a little redundant, but again, the county has not obligated at this point to any money.
No.
None of our motor fuel tax money or anything like that is at risk?
No, not on the Olympian Drive project.
Okay. Now we'll have, are we going to have four-lane road?
No.
Two-lane coming into a one-lane roundabout?
No, we are building a two-lane Olympian Drive project.
Okay. Okay. Well,
we are purchasing right-of-way for four lanes so that we don't have to come back and do that in the future.
If we have to build a four-lane eventually over there, somebody does that mean that roundabout will have to be reconstructed?
Matt, can you talk to that?
The proposed intersection, if it were to become four lanes, is actually a signalized intersection right now. That was completed as a part of the previous study, and that will remain as a signalized intersection because of the traffic volumes out there in the future.
I'm not sure what you said.
If right now we're going to build two lanes on Olympian Drive, if it would be expanded to four lanes, then the current intersection design is a traditional signalized intersection.
But now if we haven't put a roundabout in there with a two-lane Olympian, are we going to have to tear out the roundabout if we go to four lanes?
A portion of the pavement would be able to be saved, but when you're going to four lanes, you're going to have two additional lanes to the south of what the two lanes would be built, so there would be a portion that would have to be new no matter what intersection would go in there.
Okay. The last question I had would have for you. Tell us why some of the aspects of a roundabout that make them desirable, the safety features and this sort of thing. Why give us some of the elements that make them desirable.
You mentioned safety. I guess as traffic volumes increase in this location or in a location like this, the probability of crashes go up when you get more traffic. Rural stop sign controlled intersections have the probability of serious crashes to occur because of the speeds in a T-bone right angle type crash. That is probably, the number one benefit of a roundabout in this type of application in a rural, semi-rural type application is safety. It was mentioned earlier about, driving through it. A lot of care is taken in the design of those approaches to make sure you get visual cues on the approach so that people don't miss the fact that there's something in the road, a roundabout. So that is one undeniable component of a roundabout in this location is the safety of them.
Okay, Patsy?
Yes, I have a number of questions. Mr. Cope talked about taking 51 acres of farmland to do this. I need a clarification.
So do I, because I don't know where he got that number from. I think it came out of, I think he's probably talking about the entire Olympian Drive project, but that is definitely not even close to what we need. We're talking about, from the railroad over to Olympian is 20 acres? Somewhere in that area? I don't know where 50-some acre, what did he say, 70?
No, I wrote down he said 50 acres.
I don't know.
Okay. And I appreciate Mr. Easy clarifying the questions that Mr. Ziegler raised on equipment size. It doesn't seem to me, though, that you have truly accommodated those concerns that the folks who live out in the rural area are expressing. And Mr. McGinty isn't here this evening, but he did make these statements in public forum and that he attended all the roundtables, and it was very clear that the people who live out there who would be using that road, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, have absolutely no desire for a roundabout out there. And it seems very important for us as, I can't remember whether it was Mr. Christenberry or Mr. Alex, indicating that we really need to maybe revisit those folks and find out exactly if there's any change of mind or how they feel about it. But it seems that something is being pushed down their throats without due consideration to their needs. And then my last comment about roundabouts. I've listened about roundabouts and listened about roundabouts in this community, and I understand some of the principles of them very well. What I do not see in all of the studies that I have read, any controlled comparisons in different ways of designing that really truly prove all of these figures that are stated about all the safety about roundabouts. No accidents, none of this, none of that. And there are other ways of designing. And I have not found any research report that's come out and said, here's the control design and here's the roundabout design. And yes, indeed, roundabouts are indeed safer for A, B, C, D, E. And so every time there's a presentation around here, these numbers are constantly dropped and nobody challenges those numbers. And then my last comment has to do with the cost figures you're giving to us. I listened to the Urbana City Council meeting, and the cost, the additional cost to do those proposed roundabouts at Windsor and Philo and Windsor at Grace, and those figures are far larger than anything you all were talking about. So I really need to hear concrete figures on what this will cost and not this or that. And Ms. Holderfield has asked for those, and you don't have those figures to answer the question. So this is very confusing. If you're coming and doing a presentation, we need to hear about what these actual costs are going to be.
You're looking for what? What actual cost figures? This is what it would cost to build the intersection. This is what it costs to build the roundabout. Is that what you want the differentiation between?
An apples comparison. Here's how much land we need for this part of it. This is how much land we need for that. If it's stop signs, it's this. If it's signalized, it's this. If it's roundabouts, it's it this. And can all of these options accommodate the concerns that those people who live on this rural area and have the farm equipment, and I appreciate the size of, but I certainly have never driven it, but they do, and they're expressing their concern. And that's something that we as elected board members need to listen to very carefully.
Well, the exact pieces of farm equipment that were shown on this slide came from a landowner out there, Mr. Heimberger, who is the landowner directly to the east of Lincoln Avenue, asked them to design this to accommodate those particular pieces of farm equipment. And that's why those pieces of farm equipment were the ones that they had on this slideshow. So we have been talking to people and trying to design it based on the farm equipment that's in the area.
Okay, Lord, then Al, then Ralph.
Add it here, then to our engineer. They question you, but I can't see. They can't blame you because they're taking your committee away. Which I can say you always.
I wish this would have gone through committee, Lloyd.
Well, you always come out of committee about supporting you in these things, and you just didn't go out crazy and do things yourself. Now they're taking away you, all your committee, and put all the blame to work right on you. So I can't blame you for not, taking responsibility. Now, we've been the last 45 minutes trying to hash out the highway problem. And I've asked, why don't we have a highway meeting and invite everybody? Because we got the other kind of business to take care of tonight. And I don't think I should be here at 12 o'clock when things are not held sufficient like they're supposed to be in the first place. Now, is it possible that we can have a special meeting and invite people to come and put their input into this run around or whatever it is and come up with a proper explanation? Now, that is my question.
Okay, Al.
Yeah, it seems obvious to me that on both sides of the aisle, there seems to be an awful lot of resistance to this roundabout. So Let's go bottom line here. I'd like to make a motion that we reject the concept of this roundabout
point of order
at the corner of Olympia
point
Drive
of order
and Lincoln Avenue.
Point of order. I believe that's out of, that it's not on the agenda. It's not an action item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairperson, can we have a straw poll?
Okay.
It's not binding, yeah.
It's not binding to have a straw poll.
But it gives us an indication of where we're going with this, Chairperson.
Yes,
I would withdraw my motion. I would withdraw my motion if we have a straw poll.
I would appreciate it if he asked some questions.
Okay.
He would give me some kind of.
He would withdraw it. So now, Michael, and Ralph.
Okay, I'll try. I will try to make this quick since we've been talking about a roundabout for an hour. So we've been talking about a roundabout, which you guys say we have no control over for the last hour, which is really fitting for this project, which has been a nightmare to figure out for years. Maybe this went over my head earlier, but if we have nothing to do with who's putting in this road, who does? Is IDOT going to be deciding who is not us is going to be deciding what kind of intersection this is going to be?
Well, the city of Urbana is the lead agency on the project.
So the city of Urbana is going to be deciding the intersection?
But what I'm not going to do is walk out of these doors as your county engineer and, like Mr. Jay said, go represent something that you guys don't want. So I don't want to be put in that position. I want to know where you guys are coming from, what I need to be representing as your county engineer, as county board members. And I've stated my case that I believe that the roundabout has some good features. You guys have stated you don't believe it has good features. But I'm not the one that makes those decisions because I didn't get voted into office to sit out there. So I'm appointed by you guys.
Lord, you have been recognized.
Well, you tell me we have a vote to stay here all night, a cutscene discussion. You know.
Okay, Ralph.
I've been waiting out at all patiently for a long time to get the floor. I'd like to hark
now,
back.
If you're riding is still all night, I have to stay here. But
you apparently, should. I don't have it
I
yet.
I should be recognized. I asked the question. Nobody giving me an answer. Put it to a vote or something.
Okay, Ralph.
May I speak now?
Yes.
Thank you. First of all, these roads are now township roads. When this project goes through, they're going to be Urbana city streets.
That's correct.
The status has changed considerably. So we might keep that in mind. Now, the gentleman that is concerned about moving his farm machinery from the north side of Olympian Drive to the other side of Olympian Drive, that is a massive inconvenience for a farmer in harvest, and I sympathize with him. A farmer in harvest is a massive inconvenience to anybody else that's trying to use a township road, and I have sympathy with those people, too. But what I would like to ask the gentleman is, how many times a year will he be making that transfer? What's the traffic count for that?
Okay.
Can I get an answer? Where is it? We'll talk. A couple things. First of all, I really don't care what kind of intersection it is. It really doesn't matter to me. However, let me say a couple things. First, I do want to hear from the trucker who came in here tonight, because it was actually, I'm the one who requested that, not directly. I just bring a professional trucker who's been on roundabouts. I don't care if he's for or against it. I want to hear what he has to say because we're not truckers. We're not professional truckers anyway.
Right.
You know, some of us have driven trucks. I've driven a school bus at times. I know what it's like to drive long vehicles. But the other thing I want to say is that Ms. Petrie referred to some roundabouts that Urbana's trying to put in. That's a completely different story. They're trying to convert existing intersections into roundabouts. We're not doing that.
Right.
So what those costs are irrelevant to what these costs are. I do want to hear our trucker, though.
Thank you.
Okay. At the Queens and Bailey, then the trucker can come up.
I have a question to Jeff or Angela field it, since you're all engineers. I think there's been considerable confusion on the board. I've heard a couple of people ask sort of this question. You know, we just don't understand how the roundabout can use less right-of-way.
So I guess the question here is, if you look at everything to the right of that line, I mean, how would we require any pavement?
Chris, use your microphone, please.
How would we require any pavement or any right-of-way to the right of that line if this road's not there? I think that's what we're all hung up on here. It seems like for a T-intersection, this argument about requiring, you know, Jeff says we need the same amount of right-of-way. Well, I'm not sure I believe that, because it looks like the road to me would end right here if it were just a T-intersection. So if you could address that, that might help clarify a lot of things.
Sure. I wish I could take the geometry off there, but if you can look through the black lines, that intersection, that Prospect, was designed for the same design vehicle. It's a WB65, it's a 73.5 foot. So you can see that they've actually got a left turn lane heading north, and they've got the right turn radiuses. So the actual footprint is nearly the same size as what's out there right now. So you can eliminate what you see on the right-hand side for both the roundabout and a T-intersection, but you will still need to be able to make a left-hand turn with a truck and be able to make it without encroaching upon any of the vehicles that are trying to turn left and go north. So you either have to be able to swing them to the right and oversteer and come around. A truck has to be able to either oversteer and come along this radius and come back, which is essentially what the roundabout does. On a traditional intersection, you have to be able to make that turn. They have to be able to oversteer and then come back down. So you push out this radius, or what you do is you bump out this side so that they can oversteer and then make the left-hand turn as a T-intersection.
But a truck can make a left-hand turn at that existing intersection as you have it up there, right? You do it every day.
Right.
That's a real intersection, right? And the black overlay, it looks like there's a fair amount of the black overlay that's bigger than the intersection that's underneath it. And in this case, the road to the east doesn't exist. I'm
right.
Having a real problem understanding how.
Let me switch to.
We don't need right of way. How we need additional right of way. We need additional width for a T intersection.
Let me switch to the footprint view. You can see that to the west, you have to start developing the turn lane that you're going to head north. You have to be able to take it from two 12-foot lanes and spread traffic apart so that then when you want to turn left, you have a turn lane to go into. You don't have that with the roundabout, so that shrinks the amount of footprint that the roundabout has. Also, you do have additional pavement that's shown for the roundabout, but you can see on those approaches, you have less pavement needed because of the turn lane that isn't necessary.
I guess I have to apologize. I don't see it in the context of this intersection.
Okay. Before any more questions, we're going to call Tom Fraley.
Tom, you want
to? I didn't ask Tom to come prepared to make any speeches. I asked him to come to answer any questions that people might have, but I suppose, can you say a couple words, Tom?
Tell me about your experiences using roundabouts.
Personally, I don't have any. Mine's Tom Franey. I live in Champaign County, rural Rantoul, north of town. I operate my business out of Champaign, 3702 Kearns Drive. We run 20 gasoline transports. I didn't really know much about this project when Steve called me and asked me to come in and possibly answer any questions. Maybe I'm out of place here. I'm going to take a minute to take advantage, I guess, of the fact that I've got the microphone. I've figured out here in about 2 hours that the problem here is, it seems to me, it's the city of Urbana's trying to step on you guys. As a trucker, I can get my truck through that intersection. I can get a 73-foot truck in a Chuck Collins gas station here on East Main Street. I also farm. My planter is only 20 feet wide. My guess is that farmers would figure out how to get their stuff through this intersection, too, because that's what we do. We figure out how to get it done. The question here is not whether we can fit a piece of equipment through this intersection. It's whether we, the people from this area that use this area, want it. And it's whether or not we have any say in whether we get it or not. It looks to me like a lot of time has been wasted tonight on something that nobody here is going to be able to decide. So I guess I have to agree with the gentleman that said maybe we need to call some kind of a special meeting, and somebody needs to make a decision here, and we'll spend the rest of the night going over the pros and cons of this. So I apologize for being out of order here, but thanks for giving me a chance.
I did want to thank the gentleman who came as well as the professional driver who came. But I'd like to ask Madam Chair to return us to the call of orders of the day, which is the rest of the agenda under highway. That's my motion.
Okay, well, I guess we're in this discussion.
Do we vote on that, Madam Chair?
No.
Somebody write that down for me. So I can
what was that? Yeah, I missed that one.
Boozling.
All right, Foosland it is. We'll go back to number one, which is now number two. Resolution authorizing the county board chair to sign a joint agreement with IDOT for the Fisher to Foosland project. This agreement that I've talked about before, we are getting $625,000 in TARP money from IDOT. It shows a local agency cost of $1,550,000. This is basically an agreement that needs to be signed in order for us to receive the $625,000.
I move approval.
I so move.
Second.
Second and third. I come for the discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
All right, moving on to the next agenda item, resolution establishing a Class 2 truck route on County Highways 8 and 30 in order to receive the TARP funds in the amount of $625,000. The routes that we're going to use it on have to be declared Class 2 designated truck routes, which honestly, it means absolutely nothing anymore because every road in the state is 80,000 pounds. So this is just a formality.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Open for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
All right, last one is a resolution appropriating $35,000 from the County Bridge Fund. We have a culvert up north of Royal before you get to Penfield. The wing walls, one of them has fallen off. The other one is severely tilted. This is $35,000 to bid a project to replace those wing walls.
Move approval.
Second. Okay, we move to second. Open for discussion. Carol?
Just one question. Mr. Blue, when was the last time this road was done, the culvert was done for this?
It's 50 years old.
50 years old.
Yes, ma'am. And we're not replacing the culvert, only the wing walls. The culvert is still in good shape.
Okay, any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
So, yeah. Nope. Okay. We need to
seeing no other business.
Item be designated for the
designate the items on the
okay
consent agenda.
D1, 2, and 3. Okay. That's it for highway.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is finance with Mr. Rosales.
Finance, budget amendment, and transfer, one and two. Budget amendment,
12-0013, which is a budget amendment of $500,000, which is basically a budget transfer.
Move approval.
Second.
Any questions? Jan?
I guess I was wondering if one and two fit together, or do we have to vote on them separately since they involve... Oh, is that what you asked for? Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Any other questions? Jan?
But I do have a comment. I was sorry I wasn't here for the county board meeting. Since I had a health problem, I might have been able to answer or share some information that night when you referred number two on. And having just had to sit over this hour on something that we couldn't even really vote on, I want to apologize to Mr. Tracy and Mr. Parsons, who really were at a prior meeting and did a very nice presentation on the whole access program. And I do remember Mr. Tracy at the end of that evening indicating that we would be requesting this transfer. He gave the reasons why, which was, as I remember, the monies are there, but mental health board staff cannot provide direct services, so these were grants so that people are trained in the access program to do some of those services could be paid. And I just am sorry they've had to sit. They looked like they were going to be first on the items that we were going to deal with, but they're still here very patiently. But I do want to make a couple of other comments. I did not hear the discussion that night, but I understand that there were a number of questions raised about the number of youth being served and they needed answers. And I think we heard that at that presentation. But I just want to, we do have some new board members. I've been serving on the mental health board for 11 years now as the liaison from the county as a voting member. And it is quite complicated. And even though you read all the stuff, it can be difficult sometimes to remember it all. But I just want to remind the board that when we accepted the SAMHSA grant, the whole grant is about that thick. I've read the summary and summarized the complete grant, but it's very well spelled out what the mission of that grant is and how we have to carry that out. And it isn't just money coming to give to agencies to provide services. It's the main reason is to set up a system of care for youth that are, you know, in difficulties with the wraparound programs, not just so when we talk about the 72 youth, that's one youth. And I think the day that I found out that we had referred it on, I was looking at the newspaper, and it had a long article written by Tim Mitchell, and it was about the teen in Ivesdale who shot his mother and then now is asking that he live with his sister and her husband and not have to live with his mother. And I'm not sure if he's been accepted, but it looked like he might be going into the access program. Well, he would, if so, he would be listed as one youth, but it would involve working with not only the mother, the siblings, the schools, other services that might be needed. So when you look at that number for one youth, it could be working with family members and others of maybe anywhere from 6 to 15 or 20 people. So I think we have to remember that. And then over the time of the grant, then the hope for the feds is that we would have a sustainable program that would exist afterwards so that we could better serve youth from there on out as well as now. I think both of these are needed, and I think it gets a lot of scrutiny. The other thing I would have shared at that meeting was that I did go to the mental health board meeting the day before, and I know there were questions about the evaluation process. The University of Illinois is being paid $200,000 right off the top.
That's per year.
Evaluation.
And it was very interesting to hear that first presentation from Dr. Mark Aber and Dr. Nicole Allen. It was over a half-hour presentation. And it's not just what they have put together to evaluate, but that's all spelled out within the grant. They've gone off to trainings so that they know how to go about it. They've been involved in other places in these grants. They felt at this point that the committees and the project is right on target. And so I would like to reassure people that it's being watched very closely, not only by the U of I, but we have at the state level and at the federal level things being checked to see that we do them in a proper way. And it's necessary that we pass these two. And if there are questions, Peter Tracy and Tracy Parsons are both here if they have other comments.
Thank you, Jen. Ms. Michaels?
I just have a couple questions. One is that we show an expenditure, but I don't show a revenue item on this page. This is grant money, but is it money we've already received or money we are getting, and that's why I don't see an offset in revenue?
Peter Tracy, please.
Good evening. It's money that we will be getting.
So we don't have it yet?
No.
Okay. And then my next question.
Actually, let me amend that. We have some of it, but we didn't have permission to spend it from the state and the feds. And so, yes, some of it is here, but we weren't able to use it.
For this purpose that
right,
we're requesting?
Right, for any purpose.
How much of this do you have, approximately?
This is a guess. I would say probably $200,000.
Okay. My next question is that it looks to me like these monies are being requested to implement program components to construct a system for the seriously emotional disturbed. So it looks like that you're wanting to use these monies for a startup program.
No, we're putting together a plan for how to use the money that we're working with the state and the feds on. This is to, you know, Jan mentioned the wraparound program. And what that is, it deals with 10 dimensions of a child's life or a youth's life. And when we say we're constructing it, we're trying to build partnerships, build services, and when I say dimensions, we're talking about treatment as well as recreation, family, and a variety of things, pretty much everything in the child's life.
So basically,
the other things that we're constructing have to do with a youth and a parent organization, which is required by the grant. Jan mentioned that the grant is thick. This is the grant here. And it is thick, and it isn't just about the numbers of kids served. It does require us to do a whole bunch of other things related to, as I said, the family, the youth, cultural competence.
Well, I guess what I see as a board member is the memorandum from that committee asking us to give permission to use these dollars, which we have not really received all of, for this specific purpose. That was what was drawn out in the memo, and that's why I asked that question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to me it's constructing and implementing a new program. And then it said the dollars will be used to enhance treatment intervention, which is great, but is that with other agencies or just within the program itself?
It would be with other agencies, with a variety of agencies in the community.
If I may I make a motion to amend this to not exceed the monies that we have received thus far?
All right. I do have a motion and a second from Carol. Deb has some questions.
The only monies deposited into this fund are monies from this grant, and so they can't spend money that isn't there.
Well, I guess I was looking at the $500,000 request, and that's where I was sitting here saying, you know, I don't want to spend $500,000 if that's not what we've received.
You're approving.
That is what we will receive. And if it's not in the budget, we can't move ahead with implementation.
I believe this budget amendment should have been prepared showing the offsetting revenue that corresponds to this expenditure. I'm not sure why it wasn't. But if you're asking for an additional $500,000 in expenditure authority, clearly you can't do that unless you're going to receive an additional $500,000 in revenue, right?
That's correct.
So would it be fair to amend this budget amendment to reflect $500,000 in additional revenue over what you had previously budgeted is anticipated in this year?
Yes.
And would that address the concerns that you have? Because I believe that's actually what the issue
is.
That's
probably a little more accurate to say that if that's what's coming in, then that's what they want to spend.
Right. They cannot spend. You can approve the appropriation, but if the money isn't there, they can't expend it. There's no money with which to pay.
Well, let me also say that the Mental Health Board has taken the position that we will not make up money that we don't get from this grant. So, we're on record with that. We have a match requirement, but we've told the state, if they're slow on paying us, we'll shut it down.
Well, I think I agree with Ms. Busey in that the way it was presented was not as clear, and therefore that's why the questions and why I made the motion.
Well, I have a motion and a second on the floor.
Point of order, are we amending the motion to Ms. Busey's guidance?
No, we're not, unless there's a friendly motion. The motion on the floor is to put a limit. Let me go to the parliamentarian here.
First of all, you have a motion to amend on the floor, which if that takes precedent over any other motion.
Right, with the first one.
And the amendment, as Deb Busey explains, it seems almost non-germane, but that amendment is still on the floor.
Pius?
I move to amend the amendment so that it be in a manner as Deb Busey just mentioned. If Ms. Busey would say it.
The amendment to this budget amendment would be that under the line where it says increased revenue, instead of saying none, it would say $500,000 in grant funds.
Second.
Is that a friendly amendment to Ms. Michaels? Do you agree with that, Ms. Michaels? And there was a second from James Quisenberry, was it? Or?
It wasn't me, but I'll...
Carol Ammons.
Sure. Carol Ammons. Carol? Have a question.
I want to ask Ms. Busey just to clarify. Mr. Tracy said that we have part of the money currently in the budget already.
But not in the budget. If you looked at the amount budgeted for grant revenue this year, it must not include any of this $500,000.
Some of it is carryover from the previous year.
So it's not budgeted. It's not. Carryover doesn't get budgeted as revenue. So what you're doing is showing that what wasn't spent last year, we do this in December frequently. We re-encumber funds. We say we didn't spend it last year, so we're going to spend it this year. They didn't spend all of the grant money last year. Some of it is carryover. You're appropriating that in this year's revenue line plus whatever additional grant funds are going to be received, which cover the total expenditure. This grant budget is balanced. Basically, revenue and expenditure match on paper. All you're doing is continuing to make them match. So if we looked at last year, we would see that we probably spent less than was received. And this is a self-contained fund. So what is received in this fund is spent out of this fund for this grant. Does that make sense? But the carryover isn't appropriated in this year's budget. It was appropriated in last year's
budget.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes. We don't have this money as mystery. So we increase an appropriation that we really don't even have. And all we do know we have.
The revenue. You're increasing the revenue appropriation.
So we really, just doesn't make sense to me in that way.
Could we perhaps, could you, like, defer this to the board meeting so that we could bring this budget amendment back to you in a way that makes more sense?
Second.
We have a motion by Pius and a second by Jeff. Any other questions?
Can I?
Jen.
I'd like to ask, I was trying to ask the question even before she did that. I'm not opposed to the deferring. I guess thinking about your question, is part of this, you know, when you talk about the budget, you know, balances, but it isn't here. If I remember right, the grants were supposed to start in that first year at a certain time, but we didn't get the money for.
We've been behind all the way, you're right.
We were a half a year behind. We're supposed to be up and doing things, and things did happen. So to me, it seems like we're making this available now. It's not going to get all spent tomorrow, but these people in these various agencies are trained to now go ahead with some of the programming, and I want to verify if I'm thinking right or not, so that if we approve this and on county board night is fine. We don't hold up the project. I mentioned at the Democratic Caucus, and I apologize to my fellow Democrats who I expressed a lot of this at caucus. When I, you know, heard about it, I felt a little bit like when we're on the nursing home board or the mental health board, and all of those agencies are out there waiting for funds from the state. They have to go on with services, and I'm thinking, I don't want to be like the state and the feds holding up money that can be used for good programs, and we're not going to spend it if we don't have it, but I hope that we can be prepared to do that when the money comes, and hopefully it will come.
Thank you, Jen. Ms. Petrie, and then Mr. Keebler.
Well, I may be a little bit out of line since it's a deferred motion, but I am a little bit concerned based on the that the decision concerning the specifics of the spending plan are being agencies. So we're being asked to approve an amendment, budgetary amendment, on money that isn't here yet, but should be coming for something that isn't developed yet. So I need to know about us to this situation.
Mr. Keeble?
2 points. Mr. Tracy, first and foremost, if we wait till next Thursday, will that negatively impact you in any way, shape, or form?
It can't next. Be approved until then anyway.
Okay. So then number two, I move to call the question. I would like to call the question on tabling this until full board.
Second.
Are there any further questions? Discussion? Could I get a...
No discussion on the call question.
Okay, no discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries.
Actually, that's the vote on... That was vote on
vote on the motion. Now we go back to the original motion.
No? No, vote to defer now.
To the motion to defer. Okay, could I get a motion? Oh, it's on the floor.
And then I already have a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries.
Okay, we're deferred to number two.
Okay, great. Okay, number two, budget amendment and transfer. 12-00002, Project Access Initiative. In the total amount of $237,746 to reduce the original personnel budget, staffing changes were made.
So
okay, could I get a motion for that? Motion proposed by Al Kurtz.
Second.
Second by Pius. Any questions? Carol?
I know we had one of these last month. This was moved from last month, but this is moving off. This is taking the direct service out of the SAMHSA.
No, it's taking position. When the grant was first received, we had, the first year was for planning. There was no service requirement. As we move into the service phase, the functions of those employees have changed. And so that's why we are moving them out as of December, I believe it was December 5th. They resigned their positions here and were hired by another agency, and their jobs have been sort of retrofitted to do direct service tied to the wraparound program. So, I mean, you know, this is a 6-year grant that starts off low, goes high in the middle, and then down. And during that, the functions of the staff change, and we will have less staff toward the end. You know, so it's a fluid grant. It changes, and that's what we're doing.
Ms. Petrie?
One question that I sent to Mr. Tracy, and I don't see his response to that. Is this the only staff movement that you are planning, or will we be seeing several iterations of this over the next few years of the grant?
Probably some iterations of this, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Definitely.
Any further comments? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tracy.
Thank you very much.
Tracy Parsons as well for being here tonight. Section C, Children's Advocacy Center, requests approval of application for renewal and, if awarded, acceptance of the fiscal year 2013 Mental Health Board grant. What was that? Who moved it? I'm sorry?
Jay.
Jay O'Connor moved it. Second by Pius. Second by Lorraine Coward. I was looking down. Okay, any comments? Any questions? No questions? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Part C, Facilities Director.
Mr. Reinhardt is not here, but there's a memo in your packet. This is a request for a waiver of the hiring freeze so that he can fill a recently vacated maintenance worker position without waiting 3 months to fill it.
I make a motion.
Okay, I have a motion by Stan James, second by Ralph Langheim. All those in, any questions? Carol?
I just wanted to ask Ms. Busey if the position has already been posted, or this is to allow the posting to take place and move forward.
This is allow the posting to take place. However, I will tell you that the employee who left was hired in the last 2 months, and under the county's policies, we are able to go back to the group of applicants that we had in that time frame. So I'm not sure, in the interest of getting this filled as quickly as possible, that we will actually be posting again, because it's not required.
I would encourage us to post for at least one reason to encourage posting is to provide opportunity for others to apply for the position, since it's a maintenance and entry-level position for the county. That allows for some diversity in these departments, and to do it internally would restrict that process.
Patsy Petrie, Keebler, and then Stan.
My question is a budget one. Will there be any salary ramification changes?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Hi. Can you discuss briefly the typical duration of hiring somebody and getting them on board and whatnot? I wish she was here, because it's all about getting this in the arrival of spring. It's almost here. So if it takes 2 or 3 months to hire somebody, get them in and on board, we're already into summer nearly.
Well, that's one of the reasons that, because this was a position that was just recently filled and the individual has left, that we were going to follow the requirements of the labor contracts and the county's personnel policy, which would allow us to use the pool of applicants that we had when we hired this individual in less than the past 2 months. Posting and although we would have to internally post, so I respect Ms. Ammon's request that we could simultaneously post and advertise for this. We usually get a good, solid number of applicants for our positions in this economy, and typically, I guess, we could hope to have someone hired within 4 weeks.
And I'm sure you can't speak to the onboarding process, how long it takes them to get them up to speed so that they can actually make any headway with
it
her?
It depends on the experience level of the individuals that we're able to hire.
Okay.
Stan and then Alexis.
How many staff people does he have right now doing maintenance and stuff, Deb?
I think maintenance positions, it's 11.
11.
And sure. Custodial positions, if you combine part-time and full-time, it's about the same.
And that's been where his staff, my concern was at caucus that with the weather we're hitting and the summer months coming on, that the faster you get someone on board and get them up to speed and trained, we all know what our buildings need, and there's going to be a lot of upkeep this year. So I'm hoping that we can get somebody in there. This is one of the positions I really think is needed.
Christopher?
I wanted to clarify what you said, Deb. When Carol said we want to post this, you're saying that this was already publicly advertised and we got resumes at the time, but the guy who we hired only lasted 2 months. So you're proposing we go back to the resumes that we got the last time?
Correct.
As opposed to advertising?
Correct. We still have to post it at least in the county because of the collective bargaining agreement. But, yes, we were hoping to eliminate the time required for the outside posting.
Is there necessarily a difference in that time, or could we post for the same amount of time that we post?
Yeah, I think we could try and do it for the same amount of time.
Because I understand Carol's position. I mean, we want to make sure that we have the most qualified pool of applicants and potentially diverse pool of applicants we can get. But if we already advertised this position and got resumes from the general public a couple of months ago, I don't have a problem with going back to those original applicants. I would have a problem with promoting from within rather than, assuming we're going to promote from within rather than advertising it. I think we ought to look at the broad
pool. We're required to post it internally, but we hired from the outside for this position in less than the last 2 months. I would expect we'll probably be doing the same thing again.
Well, you're saying that we could post it internally and externally.
And advertise it at the same time. Or very close to the same time frame. To get as many new outside applicants
Thank you, because I share the opinion. I mean, it's 70, with 75 degrees today. We want to make sure that we've got the refrigeration people that we need on board.
Yeah.
Mr. Kurtz, you had a question? No? Okay. Are there any further comments, questions? Okay, could I get a motion?
You already
got a motion.
Oh, and I got a second?
Yep.
Good. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. D, County Administrator.
At your desk tonight are the reports. I'll just real quickly go over the General Corporate Fund Projection Report. This is basically the end of the first quarter of fiscal 2012. And there's just a couple things I would point out. First of all, if you look in the top third on the revenue side, you'll see in the far right column there's one area that says we're going to have $617,000 more than budgeted. That's non-business licenses and permits. That is entirely attributable to the volume of real estate transactions that have occurred thus far this year. And I really don't imagine that's probably going to continue, but right now, based on a trend analysis over the last 10 years, if that trend did continue as it has started this year, we would see that much more revenue. I included it in the report only because all of that revenue doesn't belong to us. And on the next page, you see with expenditures a close corresponding in purchase document stamps that we would spend $500,000 more than budgeted in that line item. Well, that will only happen if this trend continues. So the real revenue increase there is only about $100,000 when you consider the offsetting expenditure that goes along with those revenue document stamps. The rest of the report is pretty on the revenue side. We're doing pretty much as expected. Remember, about halfway down the sheet, that $535,000 deficit, that's because we got that money last year. And then on income tax, we're slowing down again on payments. We received 13 months of revenue on income tax in fiscal year 2011, and it doesn't seem to be coming in quite as steadily thus far. In 2012. So that's anticipating, that's where that shortfall is of about $250,000. So right now, if you look at it, it looks like our revenue would come in right at 100%. We'll see. It's early. On the expenditure side, again, we're underspending in personnel, as you can see in that top group of numbers. That revenue stamps is the big one, but I would also point out that gasoline and oil is likely not going to make it through this fiscal year based on what we're experiencing right now. So we'll probably see amendments for that expenditure later this fiscal year. The sheriff did not budget for $4 or more per gallon gas. And the rest of it is coming in pretty close to where it's budgeted right now. That is also at right at 100%. Looking at the summary, we would, based on the projected, we would end this year with a $330,000 deficit. The actual budgeted deficit is $125,000. Either way, we end the year in the 11% fund balance range, which is still fairly good news as opposed to where we were 2 years ago right now. The budget change report is the next report. There have only been two changes to the general corporate fund budget so far this year. They're reflected there. And the last report is a new one you haven't seen before, but I thought it was timely. At the end of the first quarter of fiscal year 2009, we came in here and you, the county board, determined that we needed to start cutting expenditures. And we spent approximately 2 years cutting expenditures. This is our personnel costs through the end of the first quarter. And I just wanted you to see that even with granting, you know, modest salary increases to our employees in fiscal year 2012, we are doing a good job of maintaining close to a 10% reduction over where we were in fiscal year 2009 before we began dealing with the impact of the downturn in the economy. So I just thought this might be something that would be valuable to see.
I move to have these two reports, the budget projection report as well as the fund budget change report, to be placed on file. Could I get a second?
Second.
Second by Al. Alan Kurtz.
Great.
Discussion, Patsy, Petrie?
And Ms. Busey, Mr. Langenham mentioned that there are going to be some costs in conjunction with the Veterans Assistance Commission. How do you see that fitting into what you are projecting here in the budget?
It's not included.
No, I know it's not included, but he said something in the range of maybe $150,000.
That would be a total annual budget, and I would say you wouldn't be looking at that amount until we're setting the fiscal 2013 budget, because the commission isn't yet established and likely probably won't be fully established until closer to the end of the third quarter of this fiscal year. Anything that we appropriate for that commission yet this fiscal year clearly is going to come from the fund balance.
Thank you very much.
Okay, that moves. Are there any further questions?
Great.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Motion carries. Part F. Oh, it's Part E at the bottom. Part E at the bottom is on page 34 through 41, which is the monthly report from the auditor.
To be received and placed on file.
Received and placed on file. Second.
Moved by Stan James, second by, I heard a voice here.
Al Kurtz.
Any comments, questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Also, all those opposed? Motion carries. Treasurer's report, Part F.
Boy, I'm so sorry. I will never look at roundabouts the same. My monthly report, I'd like to have it accepted and placed on file, please.
So moved.
Second.
It's moved by Al Kurtz, second by James Quisenberry. Any comments? Questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
I also ask for your acceptance of three resolutions that deal with mobile homes. All three of these mobile homes back in 2008 did not pay the original tax. They all went to a tax sale. They were not purchased at the tax sale, so the county actually takes kind of a deed to the property. So there's two ways to dispose of those. Somebody can come in, a taxpayer can come in and actually redeem, pay the back taxes and clear it. Or it can go to an auction and they can make a minimum bid and own the mobile home itself. That's what's happened with these. Two of the three are redemptions, and one is an actual auction. So I'd ask that you accept the resolutions, please.
Could I have this as an omnibus?
I was going to move an omnibus motion on
motion.
Parcel 14023-0065, parcel 23-043-0010, and number 30059-0009. I so move.
Moved by Tom Betts, second by Ms. Michaels. Any comments, questions? Carol?
Yeah, 1 and 2 are where an individual would come in and actually redeem. They didn't actually go through the auction process. They'll come in and pay all the back taxes that are still outstanding, and they can have the certificate removed that way. The last one is where no one has come in to redeem. The redemption period ends, and the county puts it up for auction, and we actually have a sealed bid auction for any mobile homes or strips of ground that could still be out there that no one has paid taxes on. For that particular number three, there's a $695 minimum bid that it has to be made. Someone did do that, so then they will now own that mobile home for that $695.
The outstanding taxes, though, were they usually about $200-$300?
An average mobile home tax is $73.
I was close.
Yeah. We sent up, just did it on March the 1st.
Did you change my code to mobile home?
Sure. We just sent out mobile homes recently, and we sent out about 3,000 of them, and we're going to collect about $280,000.
Patsy Petrie?
The sale money, it goes into the general fund. Is
distributed taxing districts.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and sorry to keep you waiting. Good. Any other business then? Okay, there's no chair's report, and then designation of items to be placed on the county board's consent agenda. I believe it's...
No.
Okay, the consent agenda will be the two... actually, three, which is F1, F2, 3, and 4. So on the consent agenda, it will be 2, 3, 4, the omnibus motion. Any and we also have B1. So B1, F2, F3, and F4. Any further comments?
Thank you, Mr. Rosales. Next up is Mr. Richards. Last but not least.
Good evening. We've taken Section A off the agenda. We do not have an agency report from the sheriff's office. We talked with the sheriff about coming and discussing his operations with us, and especially talking about some of his mental health operations that we've been discussing with the jail. Unfortunately, he decided yesterday, he passed on to Pius, that he didn't think his people would be able to get us the information we required by today, so he wants to do that at a future time. Now, Section B is monthly reports. Do we have any motions to accept these and place these on file? We have a motion by Ammons.
Second.
Second by Kurtz. Is that singular or omnibus? It's an omnibus for all of them. I will say, Stephanie wants to know with animal control that the number of animals who have been impounded are generally low this time of year, and indeed they are. Emergency Management Agency, most exciting thing they did the last month was a tabletop drill, and the census at JDC was between 10 and 22, pretty standard range the past month. Does anybody have any questions or comments on the agency reports? Mr. Rosales.
What is the total number of paid staff for the animal control office?
There's one full-time director. three animal control wardens, one part-time veterinarian, and then kennel workers, and I believe there may be like two full-time and two or three part-time kennel workers that maintain the impound.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions on this motion? All in favor of accepting these reports and placing them on file, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say aye. The motion passes. Is there any other business? There's no other business. We have two things under the chair's report. The jury commission has not met this month, but the monthly Saturday morning show on WBCP is continuing, and I've been the jury commission had flyers and posters printed up, which I've been seeing around town, encouraging people to get to know the jury process and, if called, to serve. And the second item is appointments for the jail task force. And those are going to be, and let me first just say we had 20 people apply. Almost all of those were extremely well qualified to serve on this. So we're very, very much set if somebody for some reason can't serve because of the day or whatever. But, and you do, your addendum has everybody who applied. The selections are going to be Bill Sullivan, Sheila Ferguson.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, could you read more slowly so we can mark these down?
Sure. Bill Sullivan, Sheila Ferguson, Benita Rollins-Gay.
Say that again.
Benita Rollins-Gay.
Thank you.
James Kilgore. Julian Rappaport. Lynn Branham. Lynn Branham. Mark Driscoll. And Scott Bennett. And the ninth is I'll be serving as the chairman of the task force as the, chair of justice. The last one was Scott Bennett. Is that who you're asking about?
Yeah.
Scott Bennett. So those eight individuals, we've got a pretty wide range of viewpoints and experience on that, ranging from prosecutors. We have several people working who worked with the mental health side. We have some people who've been in the jail. We've had people, family members who've been in the jail, and we have professors. And so I think it's going to be a big, good mix of people, but the whole point of this task force was to open this up to opinions to the community. And so we're going to encourage everybody to either testify or come to public participation. Ms. Michaels.
I just have a quick question. I don't know a lot of these people, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but was anybody here outside of Champaign, Urbana, anybody in the rural areas on this list?
There were applicants from outside of the rural areas.
Right,
off the top of my head, I can't give you numbers on who, male and female is pretty easy, but racially or addresses, I can't off the top of my head say, but we can send those out. It's listed in the application.
Okay, so was that a consideration when you were picking the people?
It was a consideration.
Outside of Champaign-Urbana?
It was a consideration.
Okay.
But it was not a top consideration, though. But we wanted to get a wide range of viewpoints and people on this to bring different things to people. Mr. Kurtz.
Yeah, I have a quick question. Mr. Scott Bennett, he has, and I want to thank you. Mr. Richards, for your hard work on this and putting this committee together. You have a really good broad range of experiences and background.
I'm sorry. Order, please. I'm having trouble hearing Mr. Kurtz.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Chris.
You, as people who are talking over you.
Okay. Thank you. Not many people can do that, usually. First, I want to thank you for your work on putting this together. You had a lot of people here who were very well qualified, and you brought a good range of experiences and expertise to this committee. I do have a question on Mr. Scott Bennett.
Uh-huh.
I notice he is a licensed attorney working in McLean County.
That's correct.
Can he make it to the meetings here that you're going to have if he's going to... What's that?
Yeah, absolutely. He is a Champaign County resident.
Okay, so you're not going to have any afternoon meetings or daytime meetings? You're going to have all evening meetings?
No, these will be evening meetings.
Evening meetings. Thank you.
Mr. Rosales?
Well, I believe that it was Darrell Cruz during the public participation that he mentioned a time frame and activities coordination with both committees. Would that be part of the task of this committee as well, to work with the facilities committee?
Well, that'll be up to the county board and the chairman, but I hope to have this committee be as useful as possible for everybody. I don't know that I can fully answer that question.
Well, I think certainly they're free to interact, but, you know, so far we've just appointed. We can't really do that until they have something to present. So when that comes down the road, when they have something to say, we'll deal with it then.
So I hope so. Mr. Allen?
Just quick, do you have any idea when you expect to have the first meeting?
I would like to get an idea what some of the best nights are from everybody, see if everybody can serve on the consensus, and try to have a meeting start in April. Keebler.
And then,
you can be me if that's okay.
No.
Couple questions. First of all, Lynn Branham just has her CV, lists her address as St. Louis. Where does she reside?
I would have to look at the application.
Okay, if we can verify. Well, the application doesn't have her address unless I'm missing it somewhere in the middle. And then number two, as was mentioned earlier, that there are four people from Urbana, three people from Champaign, a question mark, and then yourself. I would like to see some level of representation from the rural areas, including those in Rantoul or Pasotum or Tolono. I know there was at least one person from Rantoul. I would like to see someone from that area be at least be represented on this group. Thank you.
Well noted, and I think that Rantoul application you're referring to was a fairly strong one. And just because people weren't appointed doesn't mean that they shouldn't be part of this process, part of this task force. Anybody want to speak first before we go back to Geraldo? Geraldo. Oh, you, Geraldo.
No. Did he say Stan?
No. I had one question. Would this be subject, this task force, would it be subject to the Open Meetings Act?
I believe it would be subject to it. We're certainly going to follow the Open Meetings Act.
I actually don't think it's subject to, but as you said, it's going to follow the Act. I don't think it.
We certainly, it kind of defeats the purpose of trying to open this up if we're not posting our meetings and posting our minutes.
We just got a sunny award, so
we hate to lose that.
That's right,
Mr. Klusenberg. Yeah,
I don't understand why individuals keep trying to say this isn't the Open Meetings Act doesn't apply. It does. This is an advisory body that is completely in our control of being named. If you look at the Open Meetings Act, if you take that training, Pius, you will learn that this is a body that is advising us, and they have, as that kind of body, they have to act under the Open Meetings Act.
Ms. Ammons.
I agree with Mr. Quisenberry, and I think that this Open Meetings Act applies to the planning team as well as this team, and this needs to be brought back to the full board, and I think I'll have us have a discussion on that. On the policy agenda.
Following the Open Meetings Act, you're saying? Mr. Kurtz?
This would defeat the purpose if this wasn't an open meeting. I mean, what would be the point of that? I think not only do we need to have it as an open meeting, and as you said in caucus, Mr. Richards, that many of those who had not been picked or chosen would be able to come and participate with their public input into this committee as well. I think the minutes should go on our website. I think that their name should be up on the website, and that they can be contacted by our local community, whether it be the African American community or the Hispanic community. They should be allowed to open up towards having input from the community. That's what this is. It's a community committee. So I think that certainly should be the process.
Accountability for everyone in the community. Jeff, did I see your hand?
Ignore. I'm all adjourned.
Second.
We have a motion on the floor. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.